Welcome to episode 64 of Crippled System. I am 20% of your hosting group, Nathan, and I play Convergence of Cirrus and can occasionally Pigs.
My name is Katie. I am Bad Horse on the forums, and I play Circle.
This is Jeremy, Valiant 418 on the forums, and I play Rhett and mostly Legion currently.
This is Andy. I'm Major Tusk. I play Wonderful Mercenaries and Trollbloods.
And this is Brian, Carnage for You on the forums, and I play Scorn?
For Scorn.
Question mark?
And Crix-ish.
You know we're all really tired when the energetic-sounding one on the podcast is Brian.
Right. I'm ready to go. I had 6 hours of sleep.
Oh, my goodness. I set my alarm this morning for 7 o'clock so I could get up for breakfast, and I went off at 7, and I hit snooze, and I woke up at 7:30, and then I hit snooze, and I woke up at 11:42.
Nice.
Good old 11:42. Still the a.m., I did not sleep past noon.
I kind of wish that was my story.
I enjoyed breakfast, but getting up early was kind of a drag.
I made Jeremy get up to put the dogs outside.
That's true. You did.
And then I got up to feed the
Is
dogs.
Is that a euphemism?
No.
No.
You gotta put the dogs outside,
he was going,
if you know what I mean.
Oh, I have to pee.
You talk and talk? Holy shit.
It's pretty amazing.
Damon's pretty amazing.
Demon, you mean?
I would prefer to call him Damon, because having a dog named Demon really is not cool.
All right, Katie.
Matt
His
Damon.
Name is Katie. I love how you've brainwashed your husband, because his dog's name is Demon, and everyone called him Demon. They're like, I have to call him Damon. Now Jeremy's like, oh, maybe we should call him Damon.
His name is Damon.
You know what changed my mind about what we should call him is the day he snuck out of the yard, and I'm wandering my neighborhood screaming at the top of my lungs, Demon!
You don't actually have to scream it into the microphone.
It was fun for me.
No, it's not fun for the person that just listened to that.
Well, now we can say whatever we want because they can't hear.
Right? But yeah, so I decided that at that moment that the dog's name being Demon was a real problem. Because the other thing is, like, if he's ever, like, barking at someone or something like that, like, you're yelling out, hey, Demon, shut up. Like, there's a lot of problems with the dog named Demon.
Well, every time I introduced him to somebody like that, I'd be like, he's Demon. Or, like, the dog den people, they're Demon. It's not fun.
Yeah.
Because I didn't pick out that name. I call him Little D.
Okay. So sensitive on names.
But
I'm sure this is very interesting.
Does that get confusing because of the other things in the household that you call the Little D?
Nobody likes you.
I was referring to Jeremy's small penis. That was the reference.
It's not small.
Well, you know.
Ah! Suck it.
Tiny.
I would rather not.
Fair.
All right.
Understand that's not really your style.
Anyway, there was announcements.
Yes.
Announcements. Adepticon is in 2 weeks.
Fuck.
Brace yourselves. Everyone who is listening to this podcast, turn it off, put it on an iPad, go into your office, and start painting feverishly while you listen to the rest of it.
I only have like 80 more models to paint.
That's a lot.
But 70 of them are 90% painted.
Yeah, but the 90% was the percent you could spray paint?
It literally takes 10. I have like 10 seconds per model left to go, so I'm going to save it all till Wednesday.
The Wednesday for the day before you leave.
Yeah, that seems legit.
That seems like a Nathan plan.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah,
it's something.
It's something, all right.
Not a good plan.
It's the plan I got.
It is the plan.
What do you expect me to actively take time and paint instead of just watching reruns of Parks and Recreation on Hulu?
Hulu's wonderful. End of April, there's another event in Cedar Rapids.
Yep.
That'd be very exciting.
It'll be fun. We'll be there with the Not Muse crew and some of the Miami crew.
Hopefully we'll do better this time.
That'll be fun when we talk about our tournament recap later. Other than that, I know there's other things, but like my brain can't see past Adepticon.
There's that
right
Chicago
now.
Event this weekend that's sold out, so don't bother caring about it.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
there's
I think that's
the,
about it.
Barbecue park.
Well, there's events.
That's further.
I'm aware of some June and July events. I'm just choosing not to.
Yeah, we don't need to announce things quite that far.
But in June and July, there's going to be some cool things.
Godzilla still comes out in May.
True.
I'm taking that day. My whole day is going to be the IMAX.
Yeah. Winter Soldier comes out next week.
No, it comes out. We'll be at Adepticon.
Comes out while we're at Adepticon.
Yeah, I'm hoping it comes out Wednesday, so when we get down there, we can sign it and go watch it.
That would be pretty sweet.
But I don't know if it comes out Wednesday or not.
I don't either. But yeah, Winter Soldier. It comes out on the 4th, I think.
I wish I didn't know who the villain was.
Yeah. I actually don't, so that works out for me.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm not as up on my comic mythos as you are. That is definitely.
Well, you also don't know there's a 7th Star Wars movie. So you just luckily
I,
you
I
live
now
in your
no, actually
you live
I
in
am
your
aware of that
insulated
now.
World that protects you from these things
and makes movies better.
There was a – see, I'm super anti-spoiler, but there was a – God, it was probably a Cracked article. I hate to be cliche about it. But there was talking about that studies showed that spoilers actually enhance the enjoyment of watching the movie.
Really?
No, that is true. That is why trailers – people want – well, that just to a majority of people, I would say that I would agree that people here are smart enough not to fall for that stupidity.
But
they spoil things in trailers because people want that before they see a movie.
Because then they know what's coming and they feel smart.
No, it makes it easier to digest. It makes it so you don't have to be strenuously paying attention. The example they gave is think of your favorite movie that you've watched a dozen times. You still enjoy it.
Sure.
Even though you know literally everything, you can still enjoy these moments because you can just relax and watch and go, oh yeah, that line's awesome. You don't have to be like, wait, what's going on? Who's this guy? What's happening? And so it takes the strain off of it. It makes it a passive experience instead of an active experience.
But I would argue there are some movies that's good for and some it's terrible for.
Well, yeah, like but you don't want to go into a movie called Bruce Willis is a Ghost and watch the movie.
Or like Usual Suspects. Like, right. I'm sorry, but you don't want any spoilers going into Usual Suspects. It ruins the movie.
But the other thing is the movies that you rewatch a million times, like, there's a reason that you like them besides the plot. It's the way that
I mean, I've read studies, too, where that's the reason somebody's trailer, like, that trailer showed me everything. Well, that's because the mass majority of people, they want that
comfort. To be fair, I've heard, and this will play on one of Nate's phobias, with the songs that repeat themselves a lot, they do that because people enjoy them more because then they're like, oh man, I totally know this song.
Yeah.
I can sing right along because there's seven whole words in it.
Yeah.
But sometimes you get knocked down and you want to get up again.
And you want to get up again.
And you just can't keep me down.
Can't keep me down.
Or you walk 500 miles?
Yeah.
That song's more. A national treasure.
That's all we're listening to on our 9-hour trip to
Springfield, Missouri. Next time I go on a long road trip with Nate, I'm going to put that song looped with an Adele song, and they're gonna go back and forth between the two, and it's going to be amazing.
Is it going to be like haphazardly, or is there going to be a pattern?
Yeah, like sometimes it'll play I Would Walk 500 like three times, and then the Adele song, and then sometimes the Adele song will be back to back. It's going to be great.
Have I told you guys, there's a comedian, I forget his name, I probably mentioned, but the What's New Pussycat prank? Okay. Because that thing's amazing.
So
was that a, I had told you, or go on with your story?
The song. I wasn't knowing.
What
the story.
It was he talked about? You go into. Sorry, Andy. Go ahead.
Never mind. No, go ahead. You're telling a story, and I'm not going to interrupt. So
okay. Now I want to know what you have to say.
Well, I want to know what you have to say, Nathan.
Okay,
just say it.
Go into a bar. You put What's New Pussycat on the jukebox 30 times, and then you put any other song on the jukebox once, and then you put What's New Pussycat on the jukebox once, because people catch on to this terrible nightmare hell they're stuck in, where for an hour it plays What's New Pussycat over and over and over again,
right.
And then they hear that other song and they go, "Oh, thank God, it's over!" And then What's New Pussycat starts again, and everybody just eats a gun.
That's actually pretty funny.
Yes. It's a good use of $20 in a jukebox. Go on, Andy.
My comment was anecdotal to the time, and it doesn't matter anymore. So
that's kind of funny. That's a little bit funny.
No, it was just like I was going to say, rumor has it that only Nathan would be returning from Missouri.
Yes, that is true. Rumor would have it.
Rumor
has it. Nate.
Fuck Adele.
Fuck a duck. What?
Yeah, I... Gah.
So... I want to do a brief thing in honor of what I learned on the forums this week. I want to do a really quick thing, and everyone at this table knows what I'm talking about, but I won't name names, and much in the spirit of what I learned on the forums this week.
Who fucking cares?
Josh Russell is a horrible person. Nobody likes him.
Oh, but it was such a good Facebook thread.
That's fine, but you can name names.
Yeah.
He's burned so many bridges, and I... tried mending our bridge, and he just reburnt it down twice. So fuck that guy. Nobody likes him.
This is what I learned on the forums. One, that Facebook. He thinks, whatever, that Brian is two-faced, which Brian is an ass to your face. And second, that Menoth John thinks you're a kind person.
That one blew my mind.
I took the meanest things Josh said about me, and that's now my signature file I'm using on Minis.
It is a good thing.
Well, like, in the Facebook thing, he's like, you know, at least I'm a dick to people on the internet and in real life. That's not something to be proud of. Being a dick is a character flaw. Get it fixed.
Well, I like how
hide
two
it.
People, no, I'm keeping it real. No, you're a dickhead. Stop being a dickhead.
I like how two people with legit actual anger management issues, one of them being you, one of them being Was it Tim? I think it was somebody. Yeah, Tim. Anyway, two people with legit anger issues were like, you should go see someone.
Yeah.
Like, in that thread, they were like, you should go see someone professional. It might help.
He didn't get that. Like, I'm like, you should really, like, you should see a therapist. It's really helpful. He's like, ah, that's funny coming from you because you had anger issues. I'm like, yeah, that's my point. It's like when a drug addict tells you you have a drug problem, they know what they're talking about. Yes. They're not being a hypocrite.
I like when he went to. I mean, that thing went 190 posts, and I think around like only 40s when he got to physical making physical violent threats already.
Well, the threats, the first 10 or 15 were like fairly innocuous.
Let's recap what it is.
Yeah.
So, okay. Cool Kurt of Springfield fame,
right,
posted that he had put his application in for the World Team Championship American team.
Which, P.S., winner of the Crucible, pretty good player. So,
yeah. Cool Kurt.
He deserves a spot.
Good player, great guy. You know,
not on a podcast though.
And delicious gummy bears.
So that's the thing. And so immediately people are good luck, and Josh Welch was like, oh, you're not a podcast member. You just did circle jerk where you all suck each other's podcast dicks, so you're not going to be on the team. It's like, who fucking asked you, jackass? So he just comes on and just shits that pile right in the middle of the furniture and then leaves. And so people jump on him and it starts a fight, which
did.
Great tough guy, internet tough guy cliche where he threatens physical violence on like a 50-year-old man. Like really, buddy?
You're tough on the internet. I'll kick your ass in real life.
Calm down, Josh. Get therapy.
Yeah.
It was really amusing.
The best part was there were people in that thread that just came out of nowhere. Like, Menoth John of Painting with Menoth John fame has never met Josh, has no idea who he is, knows nothing about him. And so he thought it was a joke. Like, he legitimately, for the first, like, 20 posts where Josh Russell was in the page, he legitimately thought he was, like, having a little bit of fun. And so John, being John, was, like, having a little bit of fun back, and this is funny, and then it escalated into, I'm going to kick your ass and, like, rip your face off. He's like, where did this come from?
Yeah. It's like playing with a puppy that you think you're play fighting, and it's really just an angry badger. You're like, oh, wait, this isn't play anymore.
Yeah, like, after about 20 or 30 posts in, like, I get this message from Menoth John. He's like, who is this guy?
Yeah. Like 30 or 40 posts into it, Brian, for no valid reason, just shoehorned my name into one of his posts specifically.
He wanted to make sure you saw it.
It was like the bat signal. He wanted to alert me. Like, all of a sudden, my phone buzzes. I pulled it on. It's like, Brian Giese has mentioned you in a Facebook post. And I clicked it and I saw this thread. I'm like, ooh, I know what I'm doing for the next hour.
I tell you about 8 people. It was just like, I got to call everyone. I got to take people in. It was like a wrestling.
Yeah,
you
mentioned something about doing some video cast or something like that and tagged me into it, too.
Yep. That was fantastic.
And Josh was just having a great week last week, too, because he also, there was the Gorman to Seawolf thing, where, all the press gangers got unique Gorman Wolf alt sculpts. They're a one-time
really
pressing.
Cool. They look really cool.
Yeah, it's a thank you from Privateer for being, for 10 years and being a volunteer.
10th anniversary of the press gang. It was a thank you, all the current press gangers. So Meg Maples, who used to be the studio painter for Privateer Press, somebody commissioned her. They sent it to her. She painted it, spent hours and hours and hours on this thing. She couldn't get a hold of the guy.
Right.
Like, she couldn't get a hold of the press gang. She couldn't get it back to him. Nobody's seen – I think he even left the press gang now.
Yeah, he's gone from the press gang. Yep.
So she asked Private to Press. She's like, hey, I know press gangers aren't allowed to sell it, but can I sell it? And they're like, sure, go ahead. So she posts a link to it on her Facebook wall. She's like, hey, here's a model I did. I'm selling it. And because of hours and stuff like that, I'm charging like $500. Because I spent like 50 hours on it.
I saw that model.
I think it started at $450.
Yeah, it's expensive, but if you think of the number of hours she put in, whatever. Point is, Josh Russell just posted on the wall. He's like, I'll give you cost of equipment and materials for it. That's what it's worth.
Whoa.
Like, just out of nowhere. It's like, there's, you know, you can't just put price on your effort. That thing's like a $20 model and you spend $5 worth of paint. I'll give you $30 for it. It's like, the fuck? And so people are like, fuck?
Your time is just worthless.
Your time is just worthless. And so what's hilarious is then she previously had a Facebook debacle over somebody selling Kickstarter minis, you know, the temporary minis. Can't think of the term, but minis that they're never going to make again.
Right.
Somebody was selling those on eBay for like $1 billion. Limited edition. Somebody was selling a limited edition model on eBay for like $1 billion, and she said that morally she thinks that's horrible. So Josh Russell on this thread is like, oh, what a hypocrite. You think it's okay for you to charge a lot for this limited edition model? And she's like, that one was unpainted in a blister. Like, you idiot. How can you not see what's different in these two situations?
Well, okay, here's the thing, though, that because one thing that Josh did say is he was like, Brian, you like to stir the pot, which is so true, as he links people's names. But Josh clearly likes to steer the party. Like, that's what he's doing. He just wants to get people to react. Like, yeah. This is how he enjoys himself, is by making everyone else so angry.
And by, 15 posts in, he sits in pretty bad about me and Tim Simpson. And we're fairly nice to the community. I mean, I'm definitely an asshole when I need to be. But, I mean, we're generally like people. So he immediately starts out by just jumping on us, too. So it was kind of hilarious how that just fell apart in nonsense.
Yeah, I was going to say, Tim doesn't even remotely stir the pot. Yeah, he is one of the nicest guys I know in the community.
Yeah.
No, Josh Russell is just, he's just psychotic. And so he just, insults people everywhere. I don't know if he's just, the Joker and he's just trying to get chaos out there. I don't know if he thinks he's being funny. I don't understand internet trolls necessarily. But
I think it gives him a thrill to have the power to make so many people so angry. To be fair, he's very entertaining for me.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he defriended me, though, because usually he's posted by I figured if his goal was just to cause chaos, I'm surprised that he was the one doing the defriending of all these people. Because you'd think he would have kept them on Friends so he could future post on walls and continue the reign of chaos.
He's even sent Zaffity Grumble questions into us.
I know.
Yeah.
Weirdo.
Anyway, that's what I learned on Facebook this week.
I will say, though, I do enjoy his creative selective memory.
He has a very, very memory.
Denying things. He's like, that never happened. It's like, it's still on your Facebook wall, Josh. You can look at your wall from, when was the last Iowa Mayhem Cup? You can look on your own wall from that month and see the things that we're saying you said. They're there.
Yeah. Yeah, same thing with what he said to...
Maybe he wants to be a politician. He's practicing for being a politician.
Well, maybe he's clearing up all of his wall things, too. He's going to go back and delete all of his previous posts.
His wall is just puppies and stuff now.
But the thing he said about Jim, you, and Keith, who won the team tournament that time.
Which they didn't deserve.
Which Josh came up to them and said they didn't deserve that, not knowing that his own team, two of his members, or maybe even one of his members, had dropped out of a couple tournaments. And the way that they did the points for that, they didn't get any points for that tournament, even though they placed first in all the other tournaments.
Right.
They just didn't have enough points. And he's like, yeah, you guys didn't deserve that.
Showing up is half the battle. I mean, Jimmy won the six-pack.
I won a colossal because I showed up.
Yeah, you came and you also finished.
I played in every event. Yeah. I did not first, second, or third any of the six-packs, and I won.
Yeah.
And you didn't play the first round, claim conspiracy, and then leave.
Although I might in the future because that sounds like fun.
That was a little pot story because that was one of the things that he said didn't happen, was that at the Mayhem Cup, you played the first round, lost, declared it was a conspiracy, like you said, and then left and drove home.
Yeah.
And so on the thread, the Facebook thread we're talking about, he stopped posting for 15 minutes. So I posted, man, Josh has left. I he must have lost a first-round game or something. That was indeed me just stirring the pot.
You were not the only one to make a comment.
No, there
were
a few.
No, there's a few.
People I haven't talked to in so long. Just, people that were just sitting in quiet just jumped onto that thread. It was amazing. It was a good hour. It was last Wednesday for 1 hour. It was just such internet drama.
I've been friends with Increase.
Facebook stopped alerting me to the fact that people were posting on it.
My phone. And it was all this is on his I'm going to be in the WTC team thread that what's his name started his phone was dinging every single time someone posted Kurt was he messaged me he thought it was the greatest thing he was funniest thing in the world. His phone's just vibrating nonstop for an hour and a half, all this rambling back and forth. I do hope he makes a team, though. He deserves to be on a team.
I agree. I think
I think he's the best cater player in the country. That's as far as I'm going to go. I've played against a lot of cater players. I think he's people come and go in cater, and obviously Will did good with cater in little bursts, but as far as pure cater, dedicated to the faction, plays a variety. I mean, I guess Kurt's mostly just a butcher player, but
that's not bad.
In a three list format, that's a pretty terrifying combination of things.
I've never personally played against Kurt, but what I will say, and so I can't judge his playability because I've never played. But he's a fantastic person. And at the end of the day, I would rather send someone like him than someone who's super, super good but isn't pleasant. Because it's not just a tournament. It's a tournament also, but it's also an international representation of our country.
You have to spend a lot of time with this person.
Yeah.
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 Well, and, if you sell, Josh Russell could be the greatest player on the planet, which he isn't, by the way, Josh. So, don't get your panties in a bunch. But he could be the greatest player on the planet, and we still wouldn't want to send him over there because he's a shithead.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to say, and that thing, I was just about to say, hey, England, how you doing? I'm from America. Your mother's a whore. Hey, France, how's it going? I wish your dad was dead. We don't want to send that person over there.
We prefer to do that on our podcast,
right?
Not in person.
It's funnier.
It is funnier.
Anywho.
Anyway.
But yeah, no, like I said, Kurt's a good player and a great guy.
Both
and I'd rather a good player, great guy, than a great player, asshole.
Yep.
Yeah.
I 100% agree. And he's supposed to be sending us another letter at some point. He mentioned to me, when we were chatting that night, he mentioned that another letter would be coming our way for Katie
to read. Probably scared to do so.
I'm working on it.
Oh, you're working on them? Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know. He just said that he was sending it, and I said, okay, cool.
Yeah.
How would I know?
I have a topic for Katie's Corner.
Oh.
Ooh.
Tonight?
Fancy.
Tonight.
Ooh.
Oh, dear. So when I mentioned I could talk about these things for Katie's Corner, everyone was like, okay, that's cool. And Andy was like,
No. It was honestly more of Andy going, oh shit.
I forgot.
Fuck. I forgot to print it out.
So are you printing it fast, or do we have a Katie's Corner for next week?
No. It'll work.
Okay.
All right.
So we had a tournament.
A tournament
we
recap.
We didn't have one. We went to a tournament.
Everyone in this room was there.
That's true.
There is a event in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Which we've called out the Mayhem, the Muse crew for the last month.
Yep.
On Facebook, on the podcast.
On the forum
messaging.
Yep.
All sorts of just like you and us. We called out Keith versus Jeremy Ron.
Yeah,
we all
because I was going to kick his ass. Person. I mean, I was going to just destroy Keith and just beat the War Machine out of him.
Madison brought seven people, which is we brought more people to Cedar Rapids, Iowa than we can bring to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Sorry, Travis. But that's just
we've never brought two cars to Milwaukee, have we?
We have a couple times.
Have we? Okay.
The pain train at the very least.
Yeah.
We bought two cars full of McBain.
Yeah. Which was one of our biggest mistakes ever.
Doing it wasn't the biggest mistake. All of those McBains winning the first round was the biggest mistake. Because round two was a bunch of Madison McBain on McBain mirror matches.
We all realized,
that's miserable.
But anyway, so we have brought multiple cars to Milwaukee occasionally, but we're really big in this. The Cedar Rapids crew are really cool people. So we're really, I think it helps when everyone in the game store is kind of cool. That you feel more motivated to go.
Yes.
Because it's a little bit over, it's about 3 hours. That's a 3 hour drive.
It's just less than 3 hours straight driving.
Yeah. So that's about our limit that we'll go for a regular tournament. Mm-hmm. But luckily there was 19 people there. And then we were all prepared to fight the Des Moines guys. And then none of the Muse crew showed up. So that was exciting. But two of the Miami crew showed up, Fox and Colin.
Yep.
And then two more of the Des Moines area crew showed up, which the two groups didn't know about it.
They didn't know they were both coming.
Hudson and David from the Des Moines area also showed up, which was funny because when those two groups saw each other, they're like, what are you doing here?
Why didn't we carpool?
Yeah. So that was pretty awesome. So we felt automatic victory over the Muse crew.
I mean, they literally
I don't know, guys. They didn't lose a single game yesterday.
That's true.
Yeah, you didn't admit the Madison players.
We did badly. At least one of the seven Madison players did not finish in the top six.
Yes.
And that's bullshit.
That is bullshit.
We should have found a way for all seven of us to be in the top six instead of just six of us.
A two-way tie for six.
Yeah.
Spoilers alert. Should we just work our way around? You know, tell your every day. Arguing my day.
Okay. Okay. You pointed at me. I guess I'll start.
All right.
I play Convergence. Yay! Woo. I didn't have a corollary. Boo.
Or Lucant. Boo.
Or Lucant, which was I tweeted like last week that I spent like an entire day at work, the whole day. Like instead of working, I'm staring off into space and trying to think of what list to pair with Lucant because I had a Lucant list I really liked, and I thought about that for like 4 or 5 hours, and I'm like, oh, this is a pretty meaningless thought exercise. That's how dumb I am. But I should explain. Lucan's not out yet.
Yeah.
So he's not playable.
That's the reason.
Right.
Because I don't know if he'll be out by the time people listen to this, so it might not.
No, he will not. Out
he'll be out post Adepticon. I will be able to. You will be able to buy him at Adepticon, so he'll be playable at Adepticon
on Friday.
On Friday. Hilariously, the Masters qualifier is on Thursday. He will not be available at the store on Thursday, but Masters is on Saturday, so he will be available on Saturday. So
if you can
qualify without him, then you get to play with him in the actual event. It's like, you know, you earn the privilege. It's like training wheels on the bike or whatever.
I guess.
So I brought he's not out yet, and I hate Aurora, so my three lists were pretty set in stone. I played Cyntherion. It would be a tier 4 list if I just threw in a corollary, but the corollary is not legal, so he's not in there, but it hilariously cost the exact same number of points. So I had a Cyntherion tier 1, therefore. I had Carrier Group tier 4, and then I had an Axis list that I made up 30 seconds before we got to the event.
Mm-hmm.
And it went pretty well. I ended up going, I guess, whatever. I ended up going 3-1. I got fourth, so no prize coins, which didn't exist, and gift card. Gift no card. Prizes for me. Just always a bridesmaid, never a bride. I figure the corollary would have gotten me that one more place higher. But first round, I played carrier group against – I picked carrier group because my opponent had only one list, and that list had a colossal. And I'm like, I know what I can do to Gorton. I can backlash him to death. We played Incursion. He knew that it was very bad for him, the matchup, so he lined up his entire army directly in between the middle and one of the side flags. He completely ignored the other side flag, and he's like, I have a 50% chance.
I took a picture of that, by the way.
Actually. Yeah,
did you?
He had a 50% chance of having a massive scenario advantage. He figured if he spread out and tried to cover both, he was fucked, so he just gambled. And the gamble went well. The flag that he ignored completely is the one that went away. So I was spread out across the whole board. So half of my troops were way out of position. So the match ended up going very, very closer than it would have been otherwise. Turns out tuned up Earthbreakers can shoot the fuck out of Primaxiums. They do. Like, he on average attacks, he's getting 6 attacks, and they're doing... The point is, it took him 2 rounds and he killed a Primaxium just from shooting with the Earthbreaker, which is painful.
Ouch.
Stealth Chaozi are something that... Stealth Blast Immune models are a weakness for carrier groups, so I need to look for something with that. Because they don't...
Blast... How are they... Oh, it's all
because Gorton. Gorton has solid ground. Yeah. So I couldn't shoot them and I couldn't drift AoEs from my... Like they were just really the bane of my existence. I ended up just... shoving an Axiom into him and using the feet just to kill 7 Chaozi, which it was painful, but it had to be done. I ended up, hilariously enough, he was winning on scenario. He killed one of my Axioms. The second Axiom, he got a tuned-up Strength of Granited Earthbreaker to charge it. He beat the living crap out of my Axiom. My Axiom survived with literally 1 hit point left in its cortex. Or induction node, to be specific. So I survived by 1 point. Then on my turn, that Axiom and the rest of my army murdered the heck out of that Earthbreaker and backlashed Gorton to the point. Hilariously enough, I usually forget to put out a servitor because I'm bad at this game. And the Axiom attacked. He rolled Snake Eyes twice to miss 2 of its attacks, so I left him at 1 hit point. So I put out an accretion servitor and just auto-pointed his Jack for 1 point of damage and killed his caster. So he lost by 1 hit point twice. He left my Axiom at 1, and then he died exact. Second game was against Jeremy. I chose Cintherian. He chose a caster with Purification. So the third round, I was 1-1. I played against Fox. He had P-Denny. I played my Axis list. That Axis list is weird because it has no Optifex directive, which feels wrong. Any Convergence player knows how terrible it feels to not bring those guys, but I keep having to justify to myself that they're not needed in the list.
They're the Pathfinder magical whatever.
Yep, they're the mechanics give Pathfinder or magical weapon or can repair, and I don't have them in that list at all. And it feels painful, but I don't know how I could squeeze them in, and I've justified to myself that I don't need them, which could be me lying to myself or it could be mad brilliance. I'm not sure yet. I'm going to practice that list a lot. I've kind of fallen in love with that list. He had P-Denny, and then I feeded defensively against him. I got rid of his speed buff so he couldn't jam into me with his Satixis. Then he feeded on me so I couldn't counterfeed him. So we both used our feats purely defensively, and it just ended up being a grind fest. He ended up clocking himself when I had, like, 6 minutes left. Like, we both almost went to time, and neither of us had a single scenario point. And we were both down to, like...
I kind of walked by your game, and towards the end, when he was very low on time, he didn't move with the... effort of someone who you should move at. When your clock is down to the few minutes, you need to put a little more oomph in your
He did not staff. Accelerate at all. The speed he was playing when he had 2 minutes left was identical to the speed he was playing when he had 60 minutes left, and that is not good death clock management.
Well,
so
is he used to playing death clock? Cause it...
Apparently not.
I don't know.
Somebody used to death clock would have played.
Because you usually start to speed up your time around the 15-10 minute mark.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm kind of, every moment is less. I'm slowly. When I'm under 10 minutes, I'm like I'm completely
I'm
a blur.
Panic when it's single digits.
Yeah. At that point, especially if they're up on you, you're just kind of waiting for them to make a mistake or open something.
Yeah.
Up.
You run. You're going for. You're trying to figure out the one play you can do in those remaining minutes. You're just hoping you can get it off.
Yeah. I did. Because the game was going grindfest. I tried to go for it. I had Axis actually. I just charged into the middle of his army and said fuck it. And I just bought like 12 attacks and I killed a whole bunch of models and I left Axis just sitting in the middle of nowhere with like 1 focus. I'm like, if you kill him, you kill him. Bring it on. And so he should have had P. Denny just charge me. Then she could even cast Scourge to auto-knock me down, Shadowbind, whatever, and just gone for it that way. Instead, he moved an Arc Node up, and I just countercharged the Arc Node, and I'm like, fuck you, Arc Node's engaged, and now I have +4 defense against your spells. Oh, thank you for moving that Arc Node. that's something that an Axis players are happy when they trick their opponent into doing that. Yeah. Moving up to Axis before you shoot or spell him to death so that he can countercharge something that he's not going to kill and get the defense buff.
So he basically moved the Arc Node within 4, hoping to mid-drift the Scourge.
Well, he moved it up. I think he was going to try to spray me with the Arc Node first. So he moved it like 5.5 inches or so away from me. It was really close already. But yeah, he moved it up to arc through it, and I just countercharged that fucker. Mm. And I don't know if he was looking for the Mindrift Scourge. He was more than 4 inches away.
Yeah, like he
was. He was like 5.5 away. So
that makes no sense to me.
But they were Defilers, so maybe he was just looking for the spray. I don't know. But either way, so his assassination failed. So I ended up at that point I had like 4 models left, and he had 2. So I would have eventually beaten him anyway. But he ended up clocking himself. And then round 4 was against Dan. He had an Asphyxius 3 list, which is really, he beat the shit out of me with that list on Wednesday when I was playing my pigs. And so I was really, really happy to try this Axis list against his list. And it went really well for me because he had Blood Witches and he had, a whole bunch of, Dargwraith, and other things. Like half of his abilities require living models. And so half of his abilities were useless. And also it was a very good litmus test for what my list is supposed to do, which is that he alpha struck me and I just took it. Normally with Axis, I feat for the -2 defense so that they can't alpha strike me or to give myself, or not, speed rather, or to give myself +2 speed so I can alpha strike them. Instead, I just took it. I just move up with my reciprocators in shield wall. I'm like, I'm defense 14, armor 20. Go ahead and slam into him. He slams into me with my whip chips. He kills a bunch of stuff. And then the reductors mini feat and spray and kill 30 models. And then I feat and charge in to what's left. And it worked really well. And so I want to practice that list some more because I was really satisfied with it. Also, it didn't hurt. I fucked up twice, and each time I fucked up, I gave him an 80% assassination chance with spells, and instead he just failed both of those with shitty dice. Oh. So he should have beaten me twice through my own stupidity, but he didn't. So, you know, sometimes Nate dice go against the other opponent instead. Although, like, Jeremy will mention things like trip sixes and whatnot in his game against me. I was very unhappy, but it was literally the exact opposite direction. Our last 3 rounds, I don't think I rolled less than an 8 on 2 dice the entire 3 rounds. It was just my sprays. I just needed 9s. I'm like, kill, 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 kill. Just wiping everything out. And he was rolling 3s and 3s and 4s and 3s all day long. So I felt a little bad about that. But on the other hand, fuck you. I got 4th place.
You never feel bad when Crix rolls bad dice.
That is true. It's Crix.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
Crix, they just can't earn. They get no sympathy ever.
Yeah.
And I also mention, in case anybody cares, because I love this list, so I'm going to mention it in case Convergence players are listening. I have full reciprocators in the middle with full reductors with the UA behind them. I have Axis with a Steel Soul Protector, a Cypher, and an Inverter, because the Inverter is really fucking scary with Iron Aggression on it, and the Cypher can throw out blasts and everything. And then on either flank, I have a full unit of Eradicators. So on feat turn, their speed 7, charging 10 inches with mat 9, pow 14, sidestepping, and you can just, they flank around like the horns on the bowl and just smash stuff from the side. The reductors spray and the reciprocators charge up the middle, and it's beautiful.
Very cool.
Good times.
Katie Marie?
I took my E-Cougar, P-Cougar list pairing. I was going to bring E-Kaya, but I don't actually own her, and I've never played her before, and I was lazy.
Two good reasons not to bring her.
Well, not saying that I wouldn't have. I was just lazy, and I would have borrowed the model from Andy. And
that's the most important reason, laziness.
Sounds like work. So I took E-Cougar and P-Cougar, and the first round I played John, who was playing Gareth, and he single-listed it. And I rolled a lot of boxcars that game.
Good tactic.
This is a fantastic tactic. And then you got Gareth a little bit too close to a stalker, so I killed him with a stalker to the face. And then
Gareth did not survive a stalker.
And with my E-Cougar list. And then I played Esteban next, and he had a P-Cougar, or P-Morvana, E-Morvana pairing, and he told me that he was going to play P-Morvana, so of course I took P Cougar, but I think I would have taken P-Cougar anyway.
You would have. The reason he was scared to bring his E-Morvana, he doesn't play the heavy infantry in it as much. He plays a bunch of single-wound infantry, and P-Cougar's just like...
Well, because last time I went and I played Imorvana, I took Pete Kruger because I think he's the correct choice. But anyway, he was actually beating me pretty well, and then he got a little too cocky and brought Pete Morvana into the zone so he could score two control points, and I teleported Megalith with Lightning Tendrils and killed her because he left her with one transfer. So that was pretty fun. And then... my third game, I just cheated massively to win. But I played David from Iowa with my E. Kruger list, I believe. And then I went up to kill a bunch of infantry with Berserk on a Stalker that didn't have a mind. And I didn't realize he didn't have a mind until not only was that guy's activation done, but my complete turn was done. And to be fair, I could have... done regeneration because the spirit was in, and I didn't use any fury to berserk through the entire thing, but I still cheated massively and ended up winning because that was a real turn of the tables right there. But then he was playing Assyria, and he brought her up too close, and I think Kruger actually killed her. Yeah, yeah. Kruger shifted and then shot her to death. And then I played...
It does... Not that it ever feels good to accidentally cheat, but at least, like you said, it was kind of a meaningless cheat in that you could have just regenerated anyway. Yeah. The worst, almost identical situation, when that happens and your beast, their spirit is out, and you bought, like, four attacks to kill something, that feels terrible, because there was, it's not like you could have just regenerated your spirit, because obviously you can't, because, you need it for.
Well, and you told your opponent, he's like, it's no big deal, because he said fine. He could have been like, well, now, your opponent, you called it out. I mean, you saw you made the mistake.
Well,
you called
it out. I looked back down at my card, and I realized what I'd done, and I sat there for a second thinking about whether I should tell him or not. And I decided that it was the correct thing to do, because next turn, I would either have to continue cheating or call out that my mind was gone.
No, Katie, you decided it was the correct thing to do because you're a good person.
Because I'm a good person.
Not because you were scared of being caught. But you guys, he had you just like take one fury off your caster and say, hey,
you healed him. He just had to take one fury off my caster, yeah. And when we initially talked about it, he was like, it was just an order activation thing, which it wasn't because I purposefully activated the stalker beforehand. Because I wanted to feat with Kruger that turn, because I needed to push him back out of the zone because he had started... Well, it was the flags thing, and he had started scoring. The other thing with the incursion, whichever round that one was with the flags...
That's the first round.
The first round, I did the same thing your opponent did, where I bet on half the table, and it went my way. Everything that first round went my way.
I will say...
I also bet on the flags round one.
About the... He did not say the also went his right way thing, so I'm interested. Along with the cheating thing, something that I – this has come up – we've been a lot of discussing in the judge forum about things, and I wanted to mention this for people listening as well. You'll note that everything in the judge document, I think every single one of them, kind of includes the phrase, if the players cannot come to a consensus, then blank. So for those of you players out there who are like basing your behavior, well, the judge document says this is what we have to do. No. You guys can figure out whatever you want to do. Like, David and Katie, they thought about it. He's like, hey, just take a fury off your caster. We'll claim he regenerated, whatever. Or, like, if you can work out the solution as players, by all means do so. It doesn't have to all be scorched earth. The judge document says your unit is wiped out because of a bookkeeping error. Like, if you guys can fix it, by all means fix it. That's gamesmanship.
Well, and everyone that I played was really, really nice. David was a really fun person to play against in general. And then he was he was there to have fun. Everyone there was there to have fun, and so it's not like it was a meaningful event.
Well, I mean, you can have fun and it still be a meaningful event. I will interject that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, no one was like, this
we weren't
is
playing
get
for
me
money
into...
or anything
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. But I mean, I've been in the in a Masters event, and the people are still playing for fun. I mean, people are still not, you don't have to be a dick, just because it's a local tournament versus a national tournament doesn't, you can still play.
I've seen people, seen people be pleasant at both, and I've seen people be dicks at both.
Yeah.
And
there was a thread months ago in the press game forum where somebody was looking for advice on how to run a cash tournament, and everybody's like, don't do it. That's our advice.
Bad idea.
Don't have money on the line.
Yeah. I felt bad about the whole thing. I don't feel like I should have won any of my games. I felt like all of them I probably cheated on some level.
Bullshit to that.
Yeah,
because number
I agree.
One, you could, like, that was an honest mistake, number one, and you could have regenerated, so you shouldn't kick yourself over that.
And
your first one, your example of cheating in the first game was, you got the Stalker up to Gaerith, and you think out loud, now should I buy attacks or boost to hit? And your opponent's like, I'm high defense, low armor, just boost to hit. Which isn't you cheating, it's just him, you were like, he told me how to beat him. No, him saying, by the way, cast this spell here, this spell there, do this, this is one thing. Just shortening the amount of time you thought about the math,
like he basically said Gareth's stats are X.
You got the stalker to Gareth, and he just saved you the math.
Well, whatever.
You're kicking yourself about it. You legit won that first game, and the second game was an honest mistake that wasn't that big of a deal.
That was a third game.
And your second game, your opponent kept moving his castle forward. That happens.
Well, yeah. She felt bad in the second game that she knew she net decked him.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, he told her, like, she couldn't unhear which caster he was going to play.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but then I verified it with him. You said P. Morvana, right?
if I know which caster my opponent's play, I'm going
to. And to be fair, the reason he said that, I was standing there. I was talking to the two of them because Esteban and I were talking before, during round one, because I finished really fast and Esteban had the bye. And Kim and Katie and I were sitting there talking after her game, and we were like, man, if you guys were to get paired up, because they'd just been paired, and I was like, and I was telling Katie, just as her teammate / local store, I want to see her win, but also my wife, I was like, your Pete Kruger list just
craps on his Morvana list. You didn't say that. I wasn't listening. I didn't remember that comment at all. I was talking to Esteban, probably when you were talking at me, and I said, that's interesting. I've never played in P. Morvana before. I don't know what she does. And he said, would you like to see what she does? And so that's how I knew what she was playing.
The reason Esteban made his comment is immediately before he made his comment, I was like, hey, Katie, in his hearing, because I didn't care if he heard, you need to play P. Kruger because P. Kruger just shits all over E. Morvana, and E. Morvana is the scarier of his two lists. And then Esteban was like, yeah, there's absolutely no way I'm dropping E. Morvana. I'll be playing P. Morvana this game.
So Jeremy doesn't only win his games, he wins your games for you, too.
I know. Before the game starts.
How was your fourth round, Katie?
My fourth round, so at this point, I was undefeated.
You were 3-0. You were 1-3.
I was 1-3. I got the pair down in the third round. And then I went against Jordan. And I don't play against Kador that much because Jordan and I don't play each other in games.
Because no one likes Jordan.
It's a standing rule that if I can avoid it somehow, I don't play a game with Jordan because he gets angry at me when I rub it in his face if I win. So I haven't seen a lot of Kador, and so I took P. Kruger, and I should have taken E. Kruger. Like, in the middle of the game, I was like, E. Kruger seems like he would have won a lot better for this list. And Jordan was like, yeah, I figured you'd take P. Kruger, so I took this list. So
you lost to List Chicken.
List Chicken, and then Jordan is a really good player, so I don't know how it would have gone if I had E. Kruger or not, but I think he still would have done really well. He probably wouldn't have gotten so many control points.
I was over here, and you were like, this is my armor-cracking list, and he's like, nothing in this list cracks armor, and you're like, yeah, I guess not.
Well, no, it kind of does. Like, here's the thing. It's designed to take down a Colossal. And it's not designed to take down 100 infantry at arm 18. Like, it's just not designed to do that.
It's focused one target.
It's designed to take care of, like, one or two heavy armor-y thingies and then, like, pick off all the little infantry. That's what it's designed for, and that's not what he dropped.
No, he had two armor 25 jacks and an armor 24 unit or whatever the
three
fuck those
units
guys
of are. Armor 22 with Iron Zeal and Shield while they're armor 22.
Yeah. Like, I couldn't, like, P. Kruger's feet does absolutely nothing. I'd have to roll box cards.
Oh, that's true. What do? You set them all on fire.
I don't have fire.
Right. Oh, that's a personal mistake.
It was a personal mistake.
Play Fiora next time.
I will do better. So anyway.
Doesn't the battle engine, doesn't that create fire?
It's got a 3-inch AoE. I don't think it's going to be enough against
I don't know. Units. He bunched them real close together.
They're shield walled. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kill three at a time.
Yeah.
All right. Because my Pal 10s didn't do dick. And then I forgot that Kador cares about forests and I don't care about forests, so I dropped one of them in a forest because there was his guys and then a forest and then P. Kruger, and I was like, well, I don't want them getting to P. Kruger, so I'll drop it here. And then he was like, why would I have ever gone through a forest anyway? And I was like, I don't care about forests, so why would you care about forests? Anyway, I went 3-1 and got third.
You beat me, you bitch.
I did.
Congratulations on a third place finish, by the way. That is amazing.
Oh, and I bought Ikaya, which Andy's going to assemble, so now I will have an Ikaya list eventually.
And now that is a legit armor-cracking list. Ikaya will crack the crap out of armor.
All right, you're going next.
I will go quickly. I played E. Lilith, Saren, and E. Vale practicing for Adepticon. Round one, I played E. Lilith, and as I started my feet turn at the bottom of turn two, he said, oh, what does her feet do?
Always a good time.
Always a good time. So that game ended quickly. Round two, I played versus Nathan Hoffman. He dropped Cintherian for reasons that I will never understand, and I dropped Evale. And that game went downhill from there, which is really saying something.
Well, it was along the lines of never a good sign when your opponent says, hey, what does your feet do? So we were setting up our table. Like, I picked Cintherian, and he picked Evale, and we're setting up, and I'm doing it, and I look up, and I say, Jeremy, she have purification, right? And he goes, yeah. And I go, oh, right. Right.
Because Cintherian really doesn't mind upkeep removal. It's not a big deal to his gameplay at all.
My strategy that game was to never cast a spell. I just camped five focus at a time, and his dice didn't give a shit that I was camping five focus.
My Ravagor, on the first turn, he's camping five focus. My Ravagor walks up, hits him because he's def 13, and then proceeds to roll, what, like 6-6-5 on the damage roll?
Something like that, yeah.
And lit him on fire, and then the fire roll also did damage at dice minus 6. Like, it was just like, okay, I guess that's how this is going to go.
Yep.
So,
and so then I move in the mechanics to repair him, and you're like, well, the damage doesn't matter, you're just repairing him, and then you shoot him and the AoE kills three of my mechanics, and I'm like, see why it matters?
So that's how that game went. And then he had a chance to do something effective on his feet turn, maybe. And so he fully loaded his Prime Axiom, and he needed to clear off one infantry unit from it. So he had I forget what the light's called.
Mitigator.
A mitigator engaged with a
Shredder.
Shredder. Shredder had done no damage to it.
He'd done some. He'd done
a little bit.
He'd done like 8 because I had exactly 12 hit points left.
That's right.
And you were dice minus 6.
I was dice minus 5.
No. I had 12 hit points left. You were dice minus 6.
I was dice minus 6. Yep, you're
so
right.
So I gave up the free strike to min drift the mitigator's AoE to kill this infantry model that was blocking a drag lane from your Archangel to my Prime Axiom.
Yep.
And dice minus 6 with 12 boxes left.
I rolled the trip 6.
I may have heard a comment about that across the room at the time.
Like, everyone heard that comment across the room. Nathan was not happy. He's like, shit.
I don't need to roll to hit. I don't need to roll damage. I don't need my fucking legs. I don't need my fucking cortex. Any box survives. Trip sixes.
Yup.
That would have tilted me too.
He was pretty upset.
My response was, fuck you, I'm going to Long John Silver's.
You didn't quite forfeit then. Then your Prime Axiom activated.
Oh, right.
You cleared off the infantry with something else, like a monitor or something. And then you activated the Prime Axiom.
Wait a minute. I like this because you're like, no.
You didn't quit yet.
You didn't quit yet.
It got worse.
I tortured you some more. You can't just end this battle
report. No, I'm sorry. This is hilarious. So then the Prime Axiom activated, dragged in an angel, and proceeded to not kill a single fucking angel. By like with fully loaded weapons platform, all range attacks.
You're misremembering. I did not drag in an angel. I missed with my harpoon shot. And
your second harpoon shot pulled him in.
Yeah, maybe. Oh yeah, and then I just missed all.
And
the
then you just
attacks.
Missed all the
I
melee
missed
attacks.
With everything. I'm just like flim flim flim. Fuck you, I'm going
quit.
To Long John Silver's. Yeah. I said you get 61 points. I'm going to Long John Silver's.
Yeah,
it was delicious.
I bet it was. So that's how that game went. Round three, I played against the same Jordan list that Katie wound up facing, which was the Claws of the Dragon, which is kind of a holy terror. I do not enjoy that list at all. I have to actually think about what I'm going to do about that list.
Play Xerxes.
Xerxes works.
I do have one piece of advice for you. When your opponent has two jacks, when one jack kills your model with respawn, don't respawn towards the other jack.
The other one who was Breath Stealer and was speed 2 and had no focus on it.
Yeah, so you should respawn closer to it.
I got on tilt because Full Throttle was a spell I forgot existed, and so my Tenacity and Angels got their asses handed to them. I had killed him down. He had less than 10 models. He had two jacks. He had like 7 infantry, 2 of which were Great Bears. I'd killed a Great Bear and Butcher, and he killed 4 fucking heavies.
One of them twice.
Preferred if you had won that game. I think I would have had a better chance of beating you.
I think you would have.
Plus, my dream all day was for Katie to beat Jeremy in the finals. And so I told Jeremy after round three, I said, Jeremy, I mean this honestly. I'm very sad you lost. And I'll never say that sentence again.
Everyone was pretty happy that I wasn't going to win a third event, though, to be fair.
Yeah.
That would have been sad for everyone.
You should have lost to Katie.
It would have been better. It would have been comeuppance because Katie really...
Your dice hate me so much.
They do. Much like my dice against Nathan, my dice are always like that against Katie.
You know how Circle's shtick is high defense?
Not when,
Not, doesn't matter.
You know, 9s to hit are pretty easy on 2 dice.
It's true.
I've heard that.
I think it's average.
And then my final game, I played versus Fox. I think I actually was the pair down, because I think I was 2-1, he was 1-2.
And his 1 was a bye.
And his 1 was, jeez. But anyway, he played Peacecar with, it was not quite the normal Peacecar list. But at any rate, he had never faced Terran.
Bad.
So I time walked him with Saren after attacking him, and bad, bad, bad.
Sure.
So he actually, at the end of the game, when I finally killed Scar, he had 47 seconds left on his clock and had killed two models, neither of which is a heavy. He had killed a Forsaken, and he had killed a, I think, Swamp Gobber. Oof. Yeah, it was pretty bad for him.
So you went 3-1 also?
I went 3-1 also. Fifth. I got fifth. So Nathan beat me, Katie beat me, but I beat all lots of other people. So
three other people.
I beat lots of non-Madisonians, too.
Well, yeah, I mean,
really. Andy.
I brought down mercs to the event. I had Drake McBain and Dorgan Madhammer. My Madhammer list was actually modified at the last second. again, like I do. Both of them had a Colossal in it, so a Galleon for Drake and the other one for Wonderful Madhammer. My first round opponent, goddamn names.
Before the first round, one of my little favorite moments was us telling the TO, you can't start pairings yet. Andy needs to buy some of his models still. You made a list with models you didn't own.
I did make a list with models I didn't own. Possibly because I thought they might be on the shelf because they're horrible. Nobody wants them. I went looking for the Horgenhold Artillery Corps.
You went looking for two Horgenhold Artillery Corps.
Yep. So, you know, I thought maybe they'd be in the store. Nope, they were not available.
If nobody wants them, then they're not going to be in the store.
They could have been when they first ordered them. Yeah. So when they first came on the line, nobody knew what they could do.
Dusty and just hanging there.
This was during the days when Privateer didn't spoil everything in the book, and this was not really a surprise. Well, it was a surprise that it wasn't that great. Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, I went looking for two of those, and that was not very good. My first round opponent, I'm horrible with names, so I apologize for everybody. It was against a Retribution player from, I think you took him on last...
Was it Evan that I played
last time? Evan, yes, that's it. He chose Assyria, and I chose Durgan. On Durgan's feet turn, a tuned-up Earthbreaker did not take care of two Phoenixes. And that took care of my Earthbreaker, and I can't stop two Phoenixes with the remaining of my list. So that turned out I died. Second round, I went against a Scorn player that had... what's the theme force with that has like a ton of Reavers? Reavers and UA?
Makeda 1?
P-Makeda. I played that guy Makeda? Round 1.
So he
had dual Reavers with both Mike, UAs? Mike White.
Yes, that's it.
That was my round one opponent.
Interesting.
Yep, had a ton of those. So I was thinking, it's like, oh, and he was kind of talking it up. And I'm like, oh, he's got a ton of shooting. Well, I'll take Drake McBain against that because now pop countermeasures and shove it in there. Nope, he took his other list, which was Morgul and a whole bunch of heavies. That turned out where I kind of locked him up in the center. He was able to trample out, had a bronze back on Drake, which didn't do very good because it was Rage Howlered. Then Drake took a free strike.
Drake's 15-15, though, right?
15-17 in melee.
15-17.
He's unyielding.
Yeah. So,
well, 15-15 is shit, so the 15-17 is to help out.
I don't know. Yeah. Five's 15-15. Anyway.
Yeah, I was camping focus, too, so he didn't do that much damage to me, and he had needed 10s to hit because, you know.
Rage Howled.
So then he, Drake McBain, Energizer twice so I can get out of his or Energizer with two focus.
For two focus, yeah.
Moved 2 inches. Took a free strike. He missed that, too. Then I charged Morgul. And Morgul doesn't do well when he is... I got Dark Shroud going on him.
Oh, jeez.
And Grievous Wounds.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of power... Because a bronze back under Morgul is power 21 to damage. You just... You have three initials, and you can buy a few.
He trampled to get up to me.
Oh, then, yeah, that's much different. Odds are much worse.
Yeah, he trampled up to me, and he just missed a bunch of times, tried even boosting the hit.
Yeah, needing 10s, it's kind of coin flippy. I mean,
yeah. On a trample, I can see missing, but if you have the charge, it's just 2 minutes. Yeah. And you're going to, unless the dice hate you, you're going to get it done.
The big thing that happened in that, and this is something I'm hoping he'll learn too, especially when you're trying kind of any kind of charge, any kind of weird charge, when you check to see if you have line of sight, you should also do base placing as well. Especially when it's something important, and he was
down the proxy based single clipping.
He was trying to charge in. He had barely a line of sight from the outside edge of his model to the outside edge of my model, with a model in between. And he was trying to charge Morgul up to pop his feet. And if he would have popped his feet, I would have been dead. There would have been nothing I could do. But it turned out the angle was too much for him to be in melee with something.
Yeah.
Some of the those guys are really good on a lot of them have a lot of tools and things. They're really I'm good about. Some metas aren't that good about the angles and whatnot, but those guys a lot of them are always putting proxy bases down before they move, and they're getting the lasers out. I mean, they're very well trained to play clean, smooth, efficient
games. In general, I was very impressed by their meta.
My game with Fox is a little weird. It's different metas do different things differently. Like we kept he on Denny's feet turn, apparently in their meta he was adding +2 to all of his damage rolls to compensate for my armor being down, and then I was simultaneously subtracting 2 from my armor because that's what the feat actually does. So there was a 4-point swing because he's like, my armor 15 guys are down, armor 13, and his Nis are from 10 up to 12. So all of a sudden it's 12 against 13 instead of so
they're auto dead.
Yeah, it was extra bad when we were doubling the effect of her feat, and so like partway through I'm like, wait, I think we're miscommunicating here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good to make sure you're on the same ball when discussing feats like Denny's.
Her feat's really good when it's -4 to every attribute.
My third round game, I took on Esteban.
Oh.
I think that was the one with Morgul 1 and Morgul 2. Or not, no. not Morgul, Morvana 1, Morvana
yep,
2.
Yep, that was the one guy Katie played round 2.
So it turns out I learned something very important in that match. One, that Morvana has Sack Pawn.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it because I went up to her and he moved his the World Guardian, the big guy with the double fists, right up to base with Morvana, which makes sense. It's a base 10 model next to Morvana. I'm going to shoot at it and possibly damage her, but she's immune to blast damage
because he's girded.
So, but he didn't realize that it also takes the effect of the blast damage, whatever is hit by it. So she was knocked down.
Oh. Yeah, she doesn't suffer the blast damage, but she still suffers the effect of the AoE.
It's like with Battle Mages, I always set them on fire, even though I don't take damage roll from my
So then she's knocked down next to this girded model, and so I'm like, oh, this is going to be awesome. I put the first shot into her, and he's like, I sack pawn it? I'm like, oh, what?
What do you sack pawn it to?
Sack pawn it to a shifting stone.
That is the best sack pawn target for her
freaking
ever.
Freaking armor 18.
Yup.
I did forget to tune up the Earthbreaker that turn,
ooh,
too. So, it still didn't matter. He had 3 shifting stones nearby. He had a model that was tough nearby as well. I ended up brute forcing all of those to get through all of them, and then Durgan went up and just...
She was on, no transfers?
No transfers. Ah. The turn before, he popped her feet and was trying to kill off models so she could reven the Fury. She didn't kill anything on her on that turn.
Speaking of forgetting about Sackpawn, I want to give a shout-out to somebody. In the Muse thread for Vengeance spoilers, there's a bit of a debate going on where I think it was Zero Soul was complaining that Crix is kind of the whipping boy, like they always are incompetent morons. And he was describing a scene in the fluff where... I think it was Kara Sloan, like, shot Terminus, and then he described it and said, and then Terminus was so surprised that the authors forgot he had Sack Pawn that he flew away. It's like, that's a very valid point. Terminus was like, come on, guy! Just left the battle.
That's pretty good.
So, shout out to you, clever man.
Yeah, so that was my third round match. Like I said, I was able to brute force through all the Sack Pawns, and take her out. My last match was against I took him on last time around. He is the one with his first force was I can't think of the name.
Was faction?
It was Circle.
Okay.
There was an E-Kruger.
It was an E-Kruger and Cassius. That's what it was. I don't know the gentleman's name either. But if he had Kruger 2, he would have just destroyed me.
Oh, it was Jonathan.
Jonathan, okay.
I fought him in round 3.
Yeah, he was unfortunately forced with Cassius to go against the Earthbreaker. And
that tree's hard to hit.
He did keep the tree hidden behind a building for the entire time. And then when he popped his feet, it was a forest, so... I eventually was able to. I made a bunch of mistakes, but I was able to clear up a line of sight to Cassius. Earthbreaker moves up, knock down, murder. And that was pretty much it. But he did talk about how he struggled for the next 4 days after our last meeting when I did basically the same thing to his Kruger 2, of trying to figure out what to do against the Earthbreaker.
So why didn't he take? So that's why. I mean, that is obviously why he didn't take.
Kruger. He was locked.
He was locked into locked into Cassius because he took Kruger all day, and then the fourth round he
Kruger 2 is so good.
Is you throw away your entire army killing Thor, and then you're fine.
Well, yeah, you kill
once Thor's dead, the Earthbreaker's not that scary.
You kill yeah,
it's POW 13s. I mean, yeah, true. They ignore a bunch of defensive things, and yeah, they have knockdown, but. You kill Thor and he's a lot less scary. Because Thor's the equivalent of at least 4, if not 8, extra focus on that fucking thing.
Correct. Correct. On top of that, if you kill the solos, that definitely helps out the Earthbreaker. Killing the Earthbreaker, obviously. Killing Durgan, obviously. But the thing that you do to really prevent issues with the Earthbreaker, get out of line of sight.
Yeah.
Be completely out of line of sight.
Ignore it. He does not have Arcing Fire or anything like that.
No. If you ignore line, if you're out of sight of the Earthbreaker, you're pretty much safe.
Yeah.
That's about the only way to prevent it. But anyway, I went 3-1.
3-1 also, and
he
round,
he got sixth.
I got sixth. Okay. Yep, I was. My strength of schedule was not great. I think Esteban dropped after battle.
Yeah.
Well, he had kind of a rough day because he got the bye, then he had 2 losses, and he's probably kind of like, well,
yeah,
screw it.
Yeah, that's rough.
Ryan, that was it. It's me. I played my Scorn. I played Xerxes, a tier theme. Back with Tiberian. Very happy again. Subbed out. I took Mordekaiser out of the rotation and I added in Zal, mostly because every time I got Mordekaiser where I wanted him against Krix, but then he was losing too much from other factions, and I was running out of time to get him well balanced against Krix and other factions. So I went with my go to Zal. He's my safety net in life.
Yeah.
And then my third list was I got in Risheth because I have been enjoying the double sentry list from them that Paddles has suggested to me.
Yep.
So it's the first time I've actually played someone else's list, but it's been working well. Because I very rarely just play someone else's. I've been debating what I would tweak in it, but it's so efficient that it's pretty much where I like it. Round one, I took on Hudson from Des Moines, one of the 4 Des Moines people who showed up. He was playing Menoth. And also, I was happy at Zal because I saw Menoth. Zal was like a safety drop for me against Menoth because he had P. Krios, he had Resnik and somebody else. But he threw down Resnik, I threw down Zal. And I had spent the week trying to figure out which of my Zalas I was going to take. I didn't work much last week because I would just sit on my cube at work thinking about my list. Like Nathan was saying, I spent time at work. I mean, I spent an unhealthy amount of time in the last 40 hours. And I mean, I spent more time thinking about my list than I did work. Easily.
That's the proper thing to do at work.
Yeah. So we played it out, and I have Malkarn, a Gladiator, Kriya, Swordsman, Annihilators, and a bunch of assist solos, Willbreaker, Extoler, Hakkar, Paingivers, and we kind of grinded it out. I was dominating, and I kind of gambled on the flag as well on the side I wanted, because he had a bunch of people with the things, the guns and the things. The
guys with the guns and the things.
Yeah, the cross guy. The
errants?
Not the errants, the other ones. He wears a big holy cross in the back. The
zealots?
The zealots.
The bomb throwers.
So okay. They hit the bomb throwers and the bastions kind of pushing down one side. I wanted no part of that, so I said, screw it, I'm going the other way. And luckily the flag, the one I needed to go away, went away. And he was so afraid of, on turn 2, he was so afraid of Malakarn, which he should be, that he kept Resnik too far back. So then I was able to kind of push and do some serious damage on one side. And I sacrificed my swordsman to his zealots just to kind of keep him back. I kind of shoved him into him. So he killed all of my swordsmen, but he was just too far back. And then he finally had to bring in Resnik to kind of be to force the issue. And he thought he was safe from Malakarn, but unfortunately Malakarn's sidestep shenanigans found
if you're
away.
On the table, you're not safe from Malakarn.
So I was able to, I had to hit my feet. So I had defeated Malakarn, who was puppet mastered, last standed, enraged. I had every possible buff on Malakarn. And then I sent him in and basically two-shot Resnik. It was nice. I felt good.
But Malakarn will die at the end of his turn.
Malakarn did die after the last stand. It was sad. Many tears were shed. So that was round one. Round two, I faced another person from Des Moines. I faced David, and he had Rhett, so I knew I was facing Ossian. And I really wanted to play my Xerxes match again because I lost the week before without Tiberian, but I also wanted to try Risheth because I wanted to see how Risheth did. But I decided to give Xerxes a chance to redeem himself, and it was and it worked out very well. He actually killed a lot of, I mean, it was a slaughter fest. I was down to, like, when the game ended, I was down to like 3 miles, but he was down to like 2 miles, and I had like Xerxes, a gladiator, and like a pain giver left. But he would have clocked himself, so and he didn't have enough. He was down to a sign, like a random dude. Like, he doesn't have the. He only had like 3 minutes. He literally wouldn't have enough time to get through my stuff. So I put Xerxes in a spot where he could charge him, because I knew he. I mean, I'm like, here, you can charge my caster, but you're not going to kill him. But you can at least, you know, have a moment to like roll some dice or dice yourself.
Well, you were sitting on 4 transfers.
I was sitting the on sign's 4. Never going to. Yeah, I mean,
He gave him a chance to feel like he was doing something, not a chance to actually do something.
If I was afraid, I would have made him. If I actually was concerned, I would have made him. I would have made him clock himself, because I was not. I'm not going to risk it. So he went in and failed, and I just didn't. And then we shook hands, and it was over.
Yeah.
Round 3, I faced Jonathan, who was he picked Kruger for me, which locked him into Cassius, and I'm like hordes. I'm going to throw Rochette at this. Oops. And much like Nathan realizing early game how he made a terrible, terrible choice with. Your Cynthian
Veil, yeah.
I realized quite early on that I made a horrific mistake throwing Rochette versus Epic Kruger. I'm like, I got my dual locker sentries that are just being TK'd forward, turned around, and it was just I ended up winning the game sheer force of Bronzeback will. Like, my Bronzeback was like, he was so mad that all my other beasts were being slaughtered that when he got into combat, he just rolled bonkers and was just slaughtering. He killed 3 heavies by himself. Not over the course of 2 turns.
Still.
But he basically brought me back into the game. And then Jonathan did make a mistake, because he was kind of skinning stuff onto Rochette, and I had Rochette next to Kriya, and he wasted a few techs trying to kill the Kriya to like lower Rochette's armor. But if he would have just powered through that, the +2/+2 would not have been enough. Yeah. So he should have just, instead of, you know, those few attacks to try to lower the Kree, he had the Nuala Blood Reavers throwing, and there was other things they were shooting at Rochette, because he was always minus to die.
Yeah,
I had missed every time I tried to blood rate into that unit, I kept like just drifting the wrong way, because he should have been down like 6 or 7 more. I just had some bad luck there, but in the end he wasn't able to do it, and then I was able to. I basically Sunder Spirited Kruger to death. Actually, I cast Paralyze from the Kree. I finally hit a caster.
Nice.
I always see people say, oh, you just paralyze your caster, and then you defend 7, then you just kill him. And I always cast Paralyze, and the caster and always miss. That was like the first time I actually
got... It's like super short range, too, isn't it?
It is. But I mean, it was... Things were
if somebody's defense anything. Is super high, you just need to hit them with the short range, low rat attack.
Right. Because that'll fix everything.
But happens people do all the time. I watch battle reports. Some people just find, well, that's why.
It's like if something's so super heavy, you just need to lift it. Then it's not heavy anymore. It's like you're not understanding the problem.
Taking a Raider with a Kree is a pretty legit tactic, though, because then suddenly you have like a 16 inch threat range with that Kree, and then it gets pretty ridiculous.
Right.
So that happened. And then my last round was against a person I played last time, John Anderson, and who was in Gareth. He was locked in. Well, he only had Gareth.
Yeah, he's
in. So I spent like, I'm like, okay, Gareth. I had to spend a few minutes rereading all of the Gareth cards. I'm very familiar. Like, he had stuff like Nail in there. He's like, you know what Nail is? I'm from Madison. I know what Nail does. And he had some of the, he had the souls where they can do the slam, and they can like the whip snack ability. And, like, things that I don't see a lot of other. You guys play Madison.
I play the Battle Mage solos.
Yeah, but a lot of people I think they're not that good, and I think they're amazing. And he played the list very well, but it was almost 30 minutes in the game before he had finally managed to kill one of my models. So I knew at that point that all I needed to do is just kind of sit in the middle and just basically watch him bounce off my army. So he played it out. He ended up when he finally death clocked himself. I was down to. I mean, I still had over 30 minutes by the time he death clocked himself. He was. I mean, I was really, my incendiary just completely was destroying his army, and it was pretty great. And once I realized I was going to death clock him. My caster kept walking farther and farther back. So my Xerxes was kind of just on the board edge, because there's no kill box. So I was like, he was just on the back reading like a newspaper.
Yeah, because the last thing you want is to be anywhere near Gareth in a game you're winning.
Yeah, so I mean, he was as far back as possible. I eventually had to kill Corbeau. I had to kill the WAP. When I finally was able to kill all the things that could enhance Gareth's movement, then I felt more brave. But I was like, I was still playing cautious. I know Gareth can arcane assassin and having grievous wounds. You cannot get near him. I can't give him a die roll.
No.
Yep.
So I forced him to kill Bach. I was not going to give him any. Like, I was not going to look what I did against David and just say, oh, come attack my caster for a minute. I was never letting his caster get a die roll on my caster.
Yeah. So, Gareth wins the game if he gets on your caster almost every time. He just has trouble getting there.
So I won that. I went 4-0, but Jordan beat me due to control points.
You two need to play like a a match on Wednesday or something to see who's the actual champion.
Yeah. I actually surprised. Because normally when I have the pair down, so I figured it'll go to strength schedule and I'll automatically lose that. Because usually
the other person that he lost to was me.
Oh. Well, yeah, but the last round he went 2-2 and you went 3-1, so that automatically gives the person who went on. But it turned out that Jordan
must have beaten somebody else who went badly.
Yeah, but
like his first round opponent might have gone like.
Someone gave him a bunch of control points, Katie, and gave him enough the edge over me in that. So, but
I was happy. A lot of control.
I went 4-0 for the first time, and I'm actually content with my Masters list. I'm actually thinking about my Iron Gauntlet lists now. I'm thinking about taking the Crick's list with me. I'm gonna have like 7 bags in my car.
Oh my god!
Onto Adepticon because I'm gonna have different lists. It's just gonna be stupid. I'm gonna have all my models for all my armies there.
Side note, I was listening, don't get me wrong, but I was playing a little puzzle game on my tablet, yeah. And I was stuck, so I just subtly set it on the table between me and Katie, knowing that she'd get intrigued, and she already solved one of them for me. Thanks, Katie.
You're welcome.
So I have a really quick post-battle report thing. One of our listeners made this for us. I'm going to pass it around. He made us a custom-made hill. I don't know if he emailed you.
I already pointed it to you.
It was in our email. It wasn't ever responded to in our group email.
Oh, yeah. No, I showed it to everybody.
Anyway.
With our logo.
Yeah, custom with our logo. He's bringing it to Adepticon. I was the only one that ever responded to in our email.
Did none of us post that picture on Facebook?
Nope.
We should post that picture on Facebook.
We should. It's very cool looking. So anyway, we're going to meet up with him at Adepticon. I told him how to find us and, you know, what goofy things we look like. And so, yeah.
When we get email, like he has everything. You have everything forwarded, right? To
I have so everything actually alerts. Forwarded oh, over well, to over to. Well, you are a PR person, so you're supposed to be the one responding.
That's true.
I saw it and I was like, "Oh, that's really awesome!"
And then never responded.
I couldn't be bothered.
Apparently not. Anyway, I was able to be bothered.
Yeah, no, it's a very cool, very
it's
good
very
quality.
Very cool looking hill. We'll post
it. It will probably be on, I think, every single one of our video battle reports.
Oh yeah, from now on it'll be amazing because it looks really cool and it has our logo.
Sweet. So good thing you didn't make deep water.
Right. So yeah. Anyway, very cool. I don't know if we have time for this today. I had a Nate's Nuance question. That was for you, Andy. That came up at the tournament that I don't know if we have time for. Measuring melee ranges. Every tournament I go to, somebody is convinced that I'm illegally measuring my melee ranges when it's not that model being activated.
There are two things that you can measure literally at any point in time in the game whenever you feel... No, there's three things. Line of sight, although whether that's a measurement or not, your melee range and your caster's control range.
Okay, and then the follow-up question is, if I have reach, can I measure a half inch? Or can I only measure 2 inches? No, it matters.
I'd have to double-check the wording on melee range. The melee range doesn't have, like, an up to, so it's not like your... Like, control range specifically says you can measure up to any distance. Melee range probably just says you can measure your melee range.
Yeah. Well, you just use measure... You put the two... Oh,
you're just saying if you can eyeball...
If I have reach, and you don't, and I need to know if you're engaging me...
You don't want to.
Can I put down my half-inch gauge and go, nope?
I'd have to double-check the wording. My guess is that you can only check your own
melee range. So I can only use the 2-inch key, and you shouldn't use a tape measure then, because that would be too much information.
Yeah. I'd have to double check the wording, but I'm pretty sure. 10-inch
spray for 8-inch sprays.
That is true.
I don't disagree.
It would be nice if somebody would make 6-inch.
It would be an interesting ruling. There are 6-inch sprays. I've seen them.
No, but I... Well, okay. But
yeah.
But it's the same thing. Like, you can't tell somebody they can't use their tape measure.
Yeah, no. So if someone wants to use a tape measure to measure 2 inches, they can do that.
Yeah, you're just
going
to see the sunset. I mean, I would... The wording probably just says they can measure. The wording probably doesn't say up to, but I would never call anybody out on that.
Yeah. Okay.
But what I do call people out is the flip side is when somebody doesn't have reach and they're like, I want to check if this guy's in melee, so I'm going to check if your reach guy can reach me. It's like, whoa, get that key away from my model.
Yep. Yeah. That I know is illegal.
Tell me you're moving, and then I'll check.
And then I'll tell you that I just free-struck you.
All right, so what can you measure at all times? You can measure
your own model's melee range.
You can measure your own model's melee range, regardless of the timing.
Yep.
Your warlock's control area.
Yep.
And then what else?
Check line of sight.
Line of sight.
You always get to know if every model can see every model.
Excellent. Okay. I did not know about line of sight. I didn't know. I thought that was only on activation.
And you can kind of cheat that a little too, because you can measure 3 inches into almost any forest on the table.
Yep.
As long as there's a model, you're like, I need to see if I can see that model in the forest. And you can measure the 3-inch edge to see if the model is currently visible.
Very difficult to do when you have something that's an invisible feat, like Cassia's feat, to try to figure out if you have 3 inches to see into that forest.
Yeah.
But I ran into troubles with that.
But interestingly, because you're allowed to measure line of sight, you can know 3 inches from any model on the table under Cassius's feet.
Basically, if you're checking stuff into his, you get to see a 3-inch ring of the outside of his control range.
Yeah,
at all times. Yep.
Oh, you know, I didn't even think about that. We could have just just make it so he would measure 7 inches of his control, yeah. And then you could see if
I'm trying to look at the tree.
Yeah, and see if something is in kind of 3 inches.
Everything from 7 to 10 inches of his control area is knowledge.
Yeah,
because you're as long as it's not a vector that you know you can measure to.
That's interesting. That would have been very useful.
Because I do that with Force a lot with the 3-inch thing to get information about where things are.
Yeah, kind of like Praedar.
It is like Praedar.
What about command?
Command is measured during the unit's movement.
Okay.
So
yeah, Praedar is only
to that model. From my understanding, you can't measure your command is let's say 10. Your model is like 3 inches away. You can't measure to see if your command inches.
Flip side, your command's 10. The model's 40 inches away. You measure 40 inches.
Really?
You measure to the model. Which, when that was put out there, I pointed out, like, well, I could have Alexian make a Ridzin 9 inches away. It could run a foot away, and she could go. So I could measure, like, 30. And they're like, yeah, well. But, you don't measure up to your command or the model, whichever's closer, like you do with a shot. You just measure up to the model.
If somebody did that to me, that would be a dick move.
It is a dick move.
But it's legal.
I would call over a judge. Like, I understand that you just told me that, and so I believe you, but I would call over a judge regardless.
It's like the extent, when I was taking on the Kruger, he had the flying Griffin that had the extended range. Like, it was literally on the other side of my army, so when he measured, he could measure all the way through my army to get to it. Yeah. But I mean, he had to because he didn't know what it was, but it was
information.
Insane information. And it never came into play to being like a thing that mattered. But
Stalkers and Cricks.
But you could do that on purpose. Yep. You could just, I'm having this Griffin fly directly behind. Here's my megalith, and here's your caster. I'm having this Griffin fly behind your caster so I can measure 30 inches. Oh, yep. Now I know megalith's charge range.
It'll be 28 inches.
Your mother. not if you're Fury 8.
Right. I guess then it'd be like 32 inches.
Right, but it's 30 inches away in this example.
Okay.
You could be Fury 7.5.
You cannot.
They'll find a way. Shut up.
So, but have we ever mentioned what Praedar is since we brought it up?
It's measuring your prey range from every single model in your unit to
Okay,
being overly thorough in checking if you have prey.
Is it only certain miles that can? It's only miles that, or is it the whole? It's not the whole unit that can.
So when I measure from that model to the prey,
each individual unit member needs to check if they are benefiting from the movement buff. Gotcha. So you're like, all right, activating this unit. This first one's going to measure to see if it's benefiting from prey, and you get that measurement. And then the next members are going to check and see if they're benefiting from prey.
And they can check to a different – assuming you're preying a unit, you can measure all sorts of crap.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was just – I thought the whole unit was – or if one model was in prey range, the whole unit got prey.
It's each individual model.
Really? That's good to know.
I only have prey on single models, so for me it's never –
with my War Spears, I have to be really careful about it because – hilariously, if I'm within the 10 inches to get the prey speed boost, I don't need the prey speed boost to charge you.
Right.
And
it's
so,
that way a lot. Nightmare's the same way.
Yeah. So what I'll do is I'll measure it from the guy that's the closest to the target. I'll be like, well, is that guy behind you in my prey range?
Well, that's why.
Now the guy behind me can charge the guy that's not in his prey range but is within 10.
That's what Nightmare does. You prey something to charge something else. You just want the movement. You don't care about charging that prey.
Yeah. So
it's kind of the same thing with Curse on the Bane Cav. They don't need it to get to the closer range stuff, although they can use it to charge something further away and impact through the first line. Yes, Katie?
So what Brian just said, so I can measure to see if I'm in prey range. If I am in prey range, do I still get the +2 to movement even if I don't move towards my prey?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, I'm in prey. You know, Model A is my prey. Model A is in prey range. Awesome. I'm going to charge your Warcaster, who is Model B.
And is, like, completely the other direction. Doesn't matter.
Yep.
Okay.
But the extra distance sure came in handy. Thanks, Model A. Goodbye. Yeah, that's
why you pray like something that's going to be like a tar pit in the middle of the table.
Well, it used to be a thing to pray. The new version of Steamroller, you can't do it as often because a lot of them say you can't. But praying objectives was a thing.
I thought only, two, always I thought only two of them you couldn't.
Yeah, yeah. You could on all of them. Yeah. Now a couple of them can't be prayed.
It's the ones that it would be most abusive. So destruction you can't. And
it's the ones that start out contesting zones.
Yes.
That's the
but they also happen to be ones that are in the middle of the table and most convenient for prey.
Yeah.
So But yeah, Nightmare always prayed an objective. It was like, yeah. Why would you pray anything else ever?
It was pretty good.
Well, plus it's convenient to switch over later. Like, yep. That way you don't have to, you're hedging your bet. You don't pray some unit and then they have one member of that unit run to the back of the table.
Right.
You pray something you know you're going to be able to kill when you need to then, you're like, all right, I'm ready to go for the assassination with Nightmare. This random other thing's going to kill the objective. So now Nightmare's going to go, ooh, caster, delicious, and then they go for it.
Yep. Yeah, my War Spirits do that all the time. I would say 75% of the time my War Spirits are attacking things they're not even praying. I just prayed things that are convenient for the speed buff.
Yeah. Neat. Cool. Stephanie Grumble, let's go, go, go.
We have a letter for Katie.
That's right. I'm sorry. I forgot about that, and I apologize.
I'm not sure if we're going to have time for it.
Well, do we do that next week? Do we do that and not Zeppy Grumbles?
Well, let's do that next week, because I'm kind of not high energy today.
All right. So, well, next week, people, we'll have a letter.
Tune in.
Even though
a cool letter. Why not?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Oh.
Hey, maybe, yeah.
Maybe.
You don't know.
You don't know.
In the future.
In the future.
We're just making just random.
I have no idea what's going on right now.
Random observations.
I'm not picking up on nonverbal communication right now.
We'll tell you later.
Verbal cues have clarified the nonverbal cues I was missing.
We might be doing something next week, so
we'll figure it out.
Going to be entertaining, maybe. We'll find out.
I highly doubt it.
All right.
Hey,
man, this alcoholic drink next to me is looking better and better. It's supposed to be delivering it to somebody else, but man,
it's a bag with a thing on it.
It's got a faucet right there. I just want to.
I never would have stopped drinking. If those existed when I was younger, I never would have stopped drinking.
It's like a giant.
It's 7:30.
They come in different flavors.
It's like 7:30.
Yeah.
If people don't know the Wisconsin times for alcohol has stopped being sold in stores at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
So we could drink that now, and you'd have another one on the way home.
Wait. If you drink that now, you can't drive home.
So right. Yeah, I was going to say.
That is a 1.75 of mixed alcohol.
It has 13 cocktails.
Yeah.
So. No, it's just one. Sure
This is one drink.
One spot, one drink.
I just want. I will only drink this if I can have a giant straw straight through the top like a Capri Sun pouch.
Oh my god!
And then a giant peanut butter and jelly sandwich next to it, a full size bag of Doritos.
So
it's just like a 30-foot tall giant's kindergarten. Lunchable. Yeah, Lunchable.
Yeah. What's the name? From Australia. I think that's what he had in his drink.
Chunky.
I think that's what Chunky had in his drink. That might have been. Is one of those.
I was going to guess Steve Irwin.
By the way, happy birthday, Chunky.
Happy birthday, Chunky.
It was a birthday this last week. Like Friday or something.
Yeah.
But I mentioned before, I'm going to Australia sometime in next year. A year or 2 years. I want to go to Australia for a month. I want to tour their tournaments.
That sounds awesome.
I don't know.
I want to go to Australia for a month. That's separate from touring, but we can share.
I mean, this is just like a thing I want to do. I want to know like what's the best month? Have you seen
the size of their spiders?
Well, no, I'm gonna be fully armored.
Google Huntsman.
No.
Google Huntsman.
All you need to do is search like scary images. Like, there's like 12 scary images from Australia, and you think it's raining fire, but it's actually snowing, but it's actually raining spiders. And
there's the picture of the clock on the wall that I thought was photoshopped.
Yeah.
Because it has like foot long spider legs sticking out of either side behind the clock.
Yeah.
And it's not fake.
Yeah.
Nope.
Fuck Australia.
But I want to, because I mean, I know they have a lot of big tournaments down there. I want to know the best time of year that I can plan a trip to hit, you know, visit people. And they're spread out.
They're
too,
very diverse.
Because there's just the outback that's in the way of everything else.
Yep.
And I also need to go, I also need to have, like, you know, an armed guard to keep me from all the creatures from me. So that's going to be very expensive. But, yeah. So I want to go there for a month. I'm going to take four weeks off of work, and I'm just going to, you know, do the Australia thing.
That would be kind of amazing.
That's to be a 2015.
That's my favorite picture ever of the spider.
2015 is probably the most realistic thing it'll be.
Yeah.
Frank can see
that. Oh, yeah, I've seen that picture before, yeah.
Yeah. It's a picture of a rather large-sized clock about the size of a plate, and then like four legs sticking out of
Australia. That would be hilarious.
If I was sitting at home and I looked up at my foot across standard generic plastic $5 clock, and there were spider legs sticking out from under multiple sides of it, I would move.
Oh, I would move. I would A, either start setting something on fire, or I would just run out the door. I'm not sure what to do first.
I wouldn't stop to set fire. I would move. I would put an ad on Craigslist, say furnished house free, and I would be gone.
Well, first thing I do, I look around. Whenever I see a spider, I look around for his friends.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I see one. Now where's his buddy?
Because I don't even mind spiders, but there's a point, like, I would rather have a spider than cockroaches or centipedes or any of that other stuff. You know, I consider them the enemy of my enemy as my friend kind of thing. But there's a size limit at that. There's a point where you stop being a roommate and you're the devil and you need to leave. Wow, that is a cool picture of a clockwork spider. That's what Convergence Cavalry needs to look like.
That would actually be amazing.
But I will say, though, the way that the picture was took, it's only got 7 legs. Very similar to 24/B.
24/B, yeah. 24B/6.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah.
It's like, I draw you a picture of a spider.
I want my picture back. All right. Let's Amity Grumble, since we're not Katie's Cornering.
Let's do it.
Somebody set a timer.
Brian, you timing us today?
That's I will set a timer for how many minutes?
Who's doing it? Am I doing it again?
What are we at right now?
You want to do one or the other, Andy? I'll pull up the other one.
Yeah, you do. It's easier for me on Facebook's.
Okay, I'll twit.
15 minutes, 20 minutes. How much time we got?
What are we at time-wise,
Andy? We don't have that many on here, so that's good.
All right.
Let's shoot for 15. Let's try.
Okay, we'll do 15.
Starting the timer now.
While you're recording now, when you know Painting with Menoth John starts in 18 minutes.
Interestingly enough, we have been in contact with Menoth John, and we're going to be doing something about that possibly in the future.
Yep.
He also did choose to start earlier this time.
Yeah, because of Cosmos. He's moved up because of Cosmos.
Yep.
After that, he's going to move back to 7.
Because of what?
Cosmos.
Cosmos, the science
show. Oh, yes. Okay. Yes.
Which is fucking awesome.
It is cool. Awesome. I've watched it. I just didn't realize that he cared about that.
Yeah.
Well, he watches it with his kids. Grumble. Still haven't finished your last cast. Do you try... What the... Wybora?
Wybora?
W-Y-B-O-R... O-W-A. It's a vodka.
I have never heard of it.
Grumble.
Send us some.
Yeah, right?
How do the cast members deal with particular players who are quite being rude during matches without sparking confrontation?
Everyone is very friendly.
Because Katie's a cute girl. When someone's rude to me, I tend to just play an incredibly tight game because I'm just not inclined to be nice. If they're being rude... Like, in between games, I will either, depending on my mood, I will either walk away or I will walk up and verbally abuse them. Neither of which is probably the right approach, but I will do one of those.
Walking away is
during a game, approach. I will typically, I will, as John Damaris has said bestly, I will give the game my full attention, and I will make sure the game ends as soon as possible, and then I will move on with my life. Luckily, it's a very, very small percentage of time.
Agreed.
Even people who I get, that almost never happens. I'd say like once a year I run into a game where I just want it to end, and then I just give it my full attention, and then it ends.
There's a reason that you don't see people just DQ'd from War Machine events for sportsmanship issues. Like, it's not a thing, really. I mean, sometimes somebody's a bit of a dick, but you can roll through it.
I think it's happened.
It's very rare.
Not for
sportsmanship.
No.
There's only been one person ever DQ'd from an official, like, at a con event, and that was for gameplay
issues. Yeah, that was issues with that,
Yeah.
I mean, won't mention names.
I mean, sometimes people have a bad day, and they're in a bad mood, but yeah, it's rare. We're very lucky in our community.
Yeah. And, I mean, because everyone is generally so nice, if someone is being a dick, then the whole room tends
to freeze out. This is, like, the worst Zappity Grumble ever.
Zappity.
Grumble.
What?
Well, it's taken forever.
We don't have that much.
We're through two questions and we spent 2.5 minutes.
So that's a minute per. Do we have 15 questions? Good pace.
I don't know. How many
I think we're spending more time talking about the clock all the time than actually do it, than having a natural discussion.
Drink or shush.
Or both. Grumble.
Grumble. Was Katie's third place fueled by vodka?
Hot? No.
No, she was stone sober. Go figure.
Bad choice.
She's driving.
Maybe that's why she won, was because she was sober this time.
All right. Zap Grumble.
We double zappity.
There's a whole bunch of that. All right. So what's the worst cheat somebody has tried to pull off on you guys in a game?
The most common one I get is people will measure their range, and their range is magically 5 inches behind the model that they're trying to aim for. But that's
over-measuring range.
People don't realize that. I have to correct people a lot on that one. It's like, no, you measure to the model. I understand you have 8 more inches, but you don't measure the whole thing.
For what?
Guns.
For shooting.
When you're
4 inches
away and they measure their hand cannon the full 12.
People, I think most of the
things that's a misconception.
I see. Yeah. I've never really seen someone purposely cheat. I see a lot of accidental cheating.
Yeah. I would say the worst one I see all the time is apparently there are some players who all of their models have martial discipline, which is a pretty good ability. and that's why I bring proxy bases for other people to use it if that's a problem.
There's that big deal 2 War Machine weekends ago where somebody's model was like a 16th of an inch away from the flag after they ran it up, and it was like an obvious like intent thing. And so a big deal was made of decoration of intent. Mm-hmm. So at a later event, I was playing against somebody and they moved a model up and they moved another model up, and these models were like an inch and a half away from each other, and then they activated their heavy jack and tried to go in between, and they're like, well, my intent was to leave room for this jack. So then they just like rotated the base up, moved through, and then kept moving on the other side.
What? Of
the model. I'm like, that's not how declaration of intent works. Not like, what? But I was like, my intent was to leave room for Discordia to get through here. Well, that was fascinating. You didn't.
Hey, if you maybe this did you let it work?
I was so flabbergasted.
There you go. Like, see, that's a strategy.
The thing is, I prefer when people play a tight game and make me play a tight game because then if you win, you don't feel like you cheated.
Right.
I don't like it when people they measure movement. They measure out let's say if they're running, they could run 12, and then they measure out 12, and then they run 10.
Yeah. I'm super bad about it. I'm trying to be better, 8, but I do suffer struggle with that.
Also, don't bend your goddamn tape measures.
Oh yeah,
that is not. I haven't really
it's
seen
dying
it
down
a long time.
More.
I see
it's
it
dying
sometimes.
Down. I see it, but now it's the exception.
Correct. It used to be a lot.
Yeah.
I hope
measures. Like people like I want to go around this house, so they'll take their tape measure and literally bend it in an arc around the house. And the issue with that is that if you have it, like let's say I'm trying to move around this pole, if I bend my tape measure and put it here, this tape measure is no longer measuring the center of my model's base because my model would be clipping through terrain at that point.
Right.
And people do that instead of going there's 2 inches, there's two. Now I'm around. And with simple math, you can see they're like doubling the speed of their model. Sometimes
put a kibosh on that shenanigans.
It drives him insane.
Yeah, it really makes me angry. You used to occasionally see the cloth measuring tapes, and then Hacksaw went on a holy crusade, and I haven't seen one of those since.
Our Epic Nate still uses them, but he hasn't played a big con. He doesn't play War Machine anymore, but he would always use them.
Oh, there we go. Zappity.
Grumble.
Hey. Did the Muse duck you guys again?
Yes.
Yep.
Zappity.
Grumble.
My 8-year-old son played his first 2 games of War Machine this weekend. Now he wants his own army. What should I start him on? I own Trolls, Menoth, and Mercs.
Menoth?
If you wanted to play one of your 3 armies, I would say Menoth.
I would say Menoth also. I'd say, or Trolls, not Mercs.
Trolls or Menoth are pretty...
They're very similar.
Trolls
very
have similar. A lot of... They both have a lot of order of activation. I think Menoth, I feel, is a little more forgiving.
I'd say Menoth.
Too. Actually, no, I'm going to say Trolls because they're super similar, and for new players who are... Fury is easier. Because you can activate your beast and you can just force and force. You don't have to plan ahead. I mean, yeah, you have to deal with the pulling in, but thinking ahead and how much focus needs to be on a jack at the start of your turn is harder than just, my beast force for shit. So I would say Trolls.
Yeah, but it might help him learn to think of a plan before he just starts doing stuff.
True.
Yeah, because Fury just bites you in the ass later, which is hard to...
Yeah.
It depends. It depends. I would agree. Both are a pretty good option. If you're looking for an option that's not something you currently own for your kid, which it's unclear from the question, I think that Kador is actually a pretty good army for a kid. Like, it can be very axe to face.
You want something simple, a simple move.
Yeah.
I mean, Jordan plays Kador, so.
Well, what I was thinking is Malachi. Like, Malachi does really well with Kador, and
he's a young kid, and it fits
him really well.
Yeah. He's that age. We have a kid that age who plays Kador, and actually, he does decently.
Yeah.
I mean, he's... Yeah. So there you go.
Zappity.
Grumble.
All right. Kurt Heidman is asking us if we're going to read his second letter and still want to add a slap bet at the end of the letter. Best of 3. Mine, his, and the podcast choose to be ran the next time we are around each other.
So it's a good thing we didn't read the letter if it still needs to be revised. Yeah. So look at that. Happy ones of fate there.
Yeah.
Happy ending.
Eventually.
Is it a massage parlor?
We'll read your letter eventually.
Oh, listen, Kurt, just back the fuck off, okay? The letter's coming. Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I just printed it out. I mean, come on, jeez.
Come on.
Zappity.
Rumble.
For the guys, an actor you would consider to be your man crush. For Katie, an actress you would consider to be your girl crush.
Emma Stone.
Yeah, that was easy for her.
Terry Crews. Terry Crews is fucking awesome.
Sorry, I'm thinking about Emma Stone right now.
Right? Yeah, yeah, that's pretty much Emma Stone.
Terry Crews.
I mean, I don't know. I'm manly. I've never thought about that. No, I'd fuck Terry Crews.
Clive Owen.
What?
Clive Owen.
Sure, yeah.
Hugh Jackman.
I was going to say Bradley Cooper.
There we go.
All right.
Guapity.
Accepted. Grumble.
You guys going to come out to the Feast of Blades in Denver?
No.
That seems unlikely.
When is it?
I don't know. It doesn't.
I have family in Denver. Sam did not actually post anything.
Hmm? Let us know when and everything. Shoot it to podcast@crippledsystem.com, and I will get the information.
Or post on Facebook.
Or post on Facebook, apparently.
We're expanding more places.
We are. Yeah. I mean, it's possible. It really depends on the time.
Probably not. Send us the date.
Yep. Yes.
Zappity.
Grumble. Which faction, in your opinion, won the Vengeance book release?
Rhett.
Well, they did get a huge band-aid on the stealth thing with the what's-his-face.
Yeah.
Every cast of Rhett's a huge deal. This one's great.
I don't think Thane
is amazing. Eris 3 is amazing. Imperatus is fucking off the chain.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he's pretty damn cool.
Flip side, there's not a single bad Convergence model in there. Just saying consistency.
Just saying. That's
zero bad models.
That's true.
To be perfectly honest, I like most of all of it. All the Vengeance releases. They've got something really awesome in there. I really wish it wasn't fucking spoiled everything before a book came out. I wanted to open a book and see, like, oh, awesome. Oh.
That's such a momentary thing
that I think we're past that day and age.
I know.
It's kind of like trailers before the movie. It's gone. Like, now the world we live in, the stuff's spoiled.
But I agree
the book is there for the pictures and the fluff.
And the painting tips they have sometimes, and there's little things that are nice in those books. I like the...
It just would really be nice if they would be able to keep something under wraps.
But see, I think also, too, like, I remember, they get people have been, like, getting them snuck at the printers now. It's like, if they keep it secret, someone's going to sneak out a copy. So they're taking ownership of when it comes out now, and they're giving it out early because someone else is going to do it on them anyway.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think it's at least a good sign, though, that the company is getting larger enough that people are looking for these type of spoilers so they can be the big man and be in the know.
You really need to treat the books, Annie, like I do, like I did Star Trek or whatever. Like, you know it's coming up, so you have to avoid conversations. You have to avoid the internet anytime. Like, you need to quarantine yourself if you want to be spoiler-free. And that's a pain in the ass.
And I don't know that it's worth it.
It was easier to do for previous releases.
Yes,
it was easier to avoid the spoilers because I just don't go to FocusAndFury.com.
Right. Right.
Well, and now they're getting spoiled. Yeah, but anyway. Yeah.
Anyway,
Grumble.
How do you guys feel about P. Kane? Underrated caster or not?
I think he's good and he gets played.
He is an awesome Focus 6 solo.
Yeah, that is true.
He doesn't really do much for his faction.
Yeah. What's he, Rat 8? 9?
8, I believe.
He's right. Because
Rat Ridiculous.
Rat Ridiculous, yeah. I mean, well, the issue is, like, his... When people were running, like, Iron Flesh, Chaosium and stuff, even Rat 8 didn't get the job done. So, I haven't seen him a lot recently, but I think he's still viable.
I feel the same way about him I feel about P. Fiora. Rhett, for instance, is terrified of those two casters, but you just don't see him.
Right.
And I think there are other matchups where they're great, but they're matchups that, in general, aren't things that are real sticking points for, like... When you think of a faction that has trouble killing infantry, you don't go, oh man, Signar really has this problem with killing infantry.
Right, so he doesn't, yeah.
So, like, I think that's why you don't see him. I'm shocked you don't see more P. Fiora, because their faction is really great at killing heavies, and
it seems like
she'd be a good compliment.
She suffers from being, like, the fifth best caster in her faction.
She is.
You know, people don't dig deep. It's like why you only see the same four Crix casters, because the top four are so amazing, people don't dig any deeper.
Yeah.
I mean, they're viable beyond there, but why would you bother?
Yeah. And I think Kane might even be in the top four for Signar, but then E. Haley and E. Kane exist, and so...
Even the Strikers, I think, are better than Striker 2, for sure.
Striker 2, maybe.
Than P. Kane. But anyway.
Zombie!
Grumble!
Best Will Ferrell movie.
Best what for movie?
Will Ferrell movie.
Anchorman
was really...
Still haven't seen it.
I'm gonna...
Mine's he's not really good as a main character.
My favorite Will Ferrell movie was Elf.
Or Wedding Crashers was good.
I'm going Elf.
Oh.
The one where his wife No, the one where he had the thing.
He is a
yard sale.
Not the yard sale. The one before that, where he worked in the office and people are following him around. The author was writing a book about.
Yeah, they're writing a book about.
Stranger than fiction.
I like that. I like him in that a lot. Okay. That or Talladega Nights.
Andy, you said you had a trump card.
It was a Lego movie.
Oh. Well played, sir.
Zappity.
Grumble.
Are Nickelback the Beatles of our generation?
Fuck you! Who is that? Know. Is that Josh Russell? No.
It is Randy Lawson.
Randy Lawson, you are the new Josh Russell.
Well, the thing is, I've heard more Nickelback songs than I've enjoyed more Nickelback songs, so I think they're better than the Beatles.
Right? Agreed.
To be honest,
there's no way you've heard more Nickelback songs, you just don't realize that they're Beatles songs, because there's so many and they're so
the Beatles
prominent
in
our society.
Yes. On an entirely different level than Nickelback, but I will say that Nickelback isn't that bad.
Yeah.
But that's Zappity.
Grumble. Fucking grumble.
Good all right, question.
Twitter.
If you paint your own models, what is your favorite technique or tool to use?
I use spray paint. It's great. Don't use spray paint. It's wrong, but I use spray paint.
I use Marshall.
Yeah. I use money. That's my favorite technique.
I take a long time. Yeah. Time is what I use.
I read articles on how someone else did something and I copy it.
Brian, your models don't look that good.
I know.
Zappity.
Grumble. 1987 RoboCop or Ghostbusters, most defining movie of the decade.
Ooh.
I've got to go Ghostbusters on this one.
Ghostbusters had a bigger impact in my childhood.
More defining, yes, Ghostbusters wins.
Yes.
I actually watched Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters was 84, though, too, so it was younger than...
Who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters.
Also, the big question is, which was a less disappointing sequel? Like, which had the better... Like, they both have a less good follow-up, but which sequel...
I think Ghostbusters is less disappointing than the sequel is. Ghostbusters 2... I can watch Ghostbusters... It hangs up better. I like Ghostbusters 2 more.
I would agree. But that's just me. I mean, you're welcome to have a different opinion.
I have to say, I like Ghostbusters 2. Yeah.
Okay, if Nigel's in Iowa, who is grooming his hedgehog? Don't know what that is, so we're done.
I think it's a penis joke.
No, I think it's a...
It's a long podcast hedgehog? Plus 15 seconds. I don't know.
I think he actually has a hedgehog, because I remember Jamie Huddle holding a hedgehog.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. A little hedgehog. Probably named Hedgie or something. Yeah. Usually hedgehogs are named Hedgie.
Yeah.
Probably Jamie.
Recommendations.
I'm going to be an old person here, and I'm going to recommend my favorite radio show on NPR.
Wow.
Wait, don't tell me.
Is it with Painting with Manitron?
It is not. It is Wait, Don't Tell Me. It's on public radio. It's a hilarious. It's like a panel show where they have celebrities, kind of B-list celebrities. Like this last one, they had Paul Poundstone and Bobcat Goldthwait on it. Whatever. But they talk about new things that are in the news. They do trivia games with listeners. It's fucking hilarious. It's also available online. So those of you who work in a cubicle and you burn through podcasts because it's nice to have something to listen to, listen to Wait, Don't Tell Me online. It's really funny.
I was trying to explain to people yesterday. So people in Iowa were like NPR. I was like, I would listen to NPR, but because I have FM, I don't ever bother.
Yeah.
Because I want to listen to someone just yammer on when I'm in a car, because I'm trying to get, that's what I want, is just blah.
Right. But Wait, Don't Tell Me it's good, because it isn't like the, for your consideration or whatnot, where it's just like people going, and so recently the UN and blah, blah, blah. It's hilarious. It's like the Radio Daily Show.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, it's free online, so pull it up. Also, coincidentally, this morning's episode, they talked to Terry Crews.
Cool. I have a recommendation. It's an HBO show. It's an Idiot Abroad.
You son of a bitch!
Oh, it's a really hilarious show.
I talked about this like 3 months ago. I might have even recommended
Ricky
it.
Ricky Gervais sends his friend to various countries.
You knew this. You all play this.
What?
Son of a bitches. I recommended this months ago, Andy. Yeah. I talked about it.
And they're sending Warwick Davis along with them this year. It's going to be a super hilarious season. I'm looking forward to it a lot. That's all I got.
I love the mind that he has. Like, nobody thinks exactly like he does. Like, even before Idiot Abroad, when he was on the Ricky Gervais show, and they would just interview and just, you'd see glimpses into his mind. Like, my favorite, he designed his favorite animal. Like, if he designed the perfect animal, and it was a slug, like, it had, like, it got around like a slug, it had a tortoise shell and an owl's face. And his reasoning was it had an, like the slug thing was so it could climb up walls to eat vegetation and stuff. And it had the owl face so that people would think it was cute and not kill it. Like, he didn't design, like, a griffin. It's not like a lion with wings and laser eyes and stuff. He's, in his mind, the perfect animal is a slug snail monster with an owl's head.
But owls are not, like, they're kind of, I mean, they could be terrifying.
They're cute.
Some of them are cute, but, like, if I saw an owl coming after me, I'd be like, that's terrifying.
You don't have the mind of Carl Pilkington.
Oh, God.
That's how his brain works, is his perfect animal is a slug monster with an owl's face, so that you think it's cute and not kill it.
So, yeah, Idiot Abroad is basically like an adventure show. Basically, you kind of wander around checking out new cultures, and you just think of that person in those cultures. And
it's amazing.
You have not watched a single minute of it.
Remember, there's one reason, like China or someplace, and they have basically a village of little people.
Yes.
Like, that they live in their own little area and whatever. This tourist thing. He calls Warwick Davis to talk to him about it. He's like, it's great. They have a place you can live here. It's just for people like you. It's like, oh, my God. That's terrible.
Yeah, he couldn't seem to understand why Warwick Davis was angry about this. And if you don't know who Warwick Davis is, he's the guy who played just about every... He was Willow. Willow, what he was. Yeah. So he's a dwarf actor.
The best movie from Spielberg.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
But, oh, my God. I've watched all two seasons and the first episode of the third season. They're just great.
So what's your recommendation?
No, you don't like this to the pilot. All right.
Not even a little.
Jeremy?
I got so thrown off, I already forgot mine.
You're welcome.
Crap. Katie?
I recommend Prolific Cheating.
Nice.
Winning strategy.
You mean in the game, right? Not adultery?
Right. Hopefully not.
No comments?
Wow.
Really? I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
It's a question.
That you shouldn't have to think about.
No, I shouldn't. I don't like cheating.
Ooh, I know what my recommendation is. So online, I'll put a post in the forum thread, but there's these token sets you can print out and like cut up for your different factions, and they have all your spells. And while I love the ones that you write on with the marker and stuff, these things are amazing. I played the last two tournaments with them, and I love them.
I have a recommendation, actually, based off of that. If they could, I know you said they have these little tokens that you can put on the card, and it shows like if one of their aspects are out. They don't exist. I want one of those tokens, but I don't want to put it on the card. I want it to be a token that you put next to your.
That's
base.
Something we're working on designing right now.
We're going to make those.
It's literally the crippled system token that we've been talking about for.
I don't know what's going on.
Well, in general,
we have to actually get it designed and give to someone. It's a two-step process, and
I will have the design ready by next week.
Then we're going to kick some butt.
Yeah, but they are a fantastic idea.
Because you were talking about the card, and I was like, the card won't help.
I was putting like Fury on the card to just like visibly remind myself, hey, dumbass, there's a thing you need to do here.
But once he did it, he put it on the card. Well, he was talking about he kept it on the card. Like the Animus tokens were on the beast card, and then when he cast the Animus, he moved it to next to the model.
Yeah, on the table. You want the tokens on the table, not on the card. He just meant for
real. I was just doing the best I could because I can't just put random Fury tokens on the table because that's confusing. And so I was putting them on my cards in front of me.
You know what's confusing? When you have the same tokens as somebody else.
Yep. When you play Circle Mirror Match and you both use Circle tokens, you can't tell what's going on.
I recommend for anybody who has a Hordes faction, run with a separate color tokens for your caster than what you put on your beasts.
Yes, I do that.
I do that too. Yep.
Because it is so annoying to see people just like, oh, I'm just going to start casting spells, and you pull off all that Fury that was the beast that was right next to your caster. Yep. It just makes things less confusing.
Yeah.
I use the actual Falcon tokens. I use the actual Focus little discs that they come from Private PP, but then I just use red tokens for
people. I just use two different factions' tokens.
Something so it differentiates the two.
Yes, and I've seen people use beads and stuff, different color beads. But yeah,
I hate dice.
Dice are terrible. You should never
like
do that.
Dice.
Anyone who uses dice to track damage or damage on models purely, like if you're doing it on a card tool, it's just a visual reminder, whatever, or Focus, you're fired. I hate you.
The only time I've seen dice that I enjoyed people using actually is people who have a shitload of D8s and put them next to their bastions as you hurt them.
It's a great visual reminder, but I still want it on the card in case you bump that dice.
True. Very true.
I have been using dice to mark damage on my Tharn because their bases aren't painted and so they're not numbered.
We should probably number them.
Yeah, I know. It's a project. One of them is a skinwalker as well, and one of them is a white mane. So there are various problems with my Tharn unit. Jeez.
So one of the things I used to do with my runes of war, all my rune shapers, they're tough, so they'd always be at one wound. I would just put down a marker next to them to any of them that were at one wound.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
Considering
too.
I have 30 medium base 8 wound models, I definitely understand the concern of things. That's why.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I'll piggyback down a little bit with visibility. Playing the Claws of the Dragon made me want to rip Jordan's eyes out because there's no indicator of the UAs, the unit leaders, or the standards. So he's just like, well, clearly that guy's a UA that you just shot at, and so he has 5 wounds.
To be fair, that's an upgrade from what it used to be like playing as Jordan, because he'd say, these 6 random guys I'm pointing at are Doom Reaver Unit 1.
Right.
These other 6 random guys are Doom Reaver Unit 2. They're all interwoven, and you're not going to be able to keep track of them throughout the game, but I swear up in my head I know which
unit. Well, they're marked.
On the back of the base, they're marked. Yeah. That's really fucking helpful.
So I painted all of my cataphracts exactly the same.
Because you are an ass.
But what I do is I have my pink units everyone's base. I have my pink unit, my yellow unit, my red unit, my blue unit.
You need an indicator of what unit they're in, and you need to indicate anything that has multiple wounds needs to be fucking.
But I was thinking of only marking the back base different colors and the front base the same, but I chose not to be that guy.
I'm going to push in the next steamroller for it to be a requirement that all different units have to have different colored pirate hats. In my experience, that's a fine way to denote it.
I did enjoy playing. I did enjoy playing against your Bart hat, Sirius, this last time. But yeah, the visual indicator of the Fury and then the unit, like, people, that, yep. I don't care if you play unpainted. Play unpainted. Put a red line down the chest of the officer and then red hands on the other ones. You're never going to paint your models anyway if you play them always pewter. I don't care. That's fine. If you're going to play a spam list, make it visibly playable for your opponent. Otherwise, it's just kind of being a jerk.
That sounds like the kind of thing that should be required.
I agree. I was going to say, the things with the Black Dragon, so you can tell them apart from the rest of the guys. I mean, all they are is just a shield. It's the same thing.
The UA looks identical.
No, it doesn't. Actually, if you look at it close enough,
if he had them painted, it's hard to look close enough.
Yeah.
Correct.
The UA definitely is different than the other ones.
The only one I can tell is the standard.
And then the other thing is, if you don't own the model, you probably haven't looked at it that closely.
Very true.
Jordan was trying to tell me how their stance is completely unique, and I was like, well, they all look like Iron Fang dudes standing on the table, and there's 30 of them.
So here's a quick visual. I know we're
rambling at the recommendations.
But it's the bald one is the actual unit leader.
That one he pointed out, and that's fine. I'm okay with that.
And then the actual UA, the officer, he's really thick and holding on his spear off to the side.
So I need a tangent. One thing I find with these people, they spam these units. They run them and they spread out their complete leadership. They're command 9. So they have models, you know, their leader's in the middle and they go 9 left, 9 right. So it's 18 inches from the two ends. Yeah. And they think that leader in the middle is going to goddamn keep. So all I do is so many times you kill the leader, then like...
I can't tell who the leader is.
But I mean, but just assume...
He's talking tactics now.
I'm not saying tactics. So I just assume... So when you don't notice, I always say when you see all these players playing these huge command distance units and they're spamming them, I'm telling you, 9 times out of 10, they're going to have their leader in the middle, hoping you don't know who he is, because they're not even realizing if you snipe him out, now they have to move that leader left or right, now they're going to have 2 to 4 miles out of command. It happens so many times.
Yeah.
I get people... all the time on that lately.
And if I could have told who his officers were, I would have done that.
But you could freely ask him too.
Yeah. Having
to ask every turn is enough.
Well, as you start killing them, you'll catch them real fast. I'm just telling you, next time, Jordan, a lot of our players spread their armies out. Because you're command 9 doesn't mean you need to be 9 inches.
Oh, yeah, his 6-inch Doom Reavers are like...
Yeah, so you kill the leader and you just start screwing him over.
Yeah, he loses half the Doom Reavers when you kill one.
Do you remember, if models are out of formation, they cannot make attacks, so you can just walk away from them.
Yep. And the next turn, they don't get to make an attack. They either walk towards or run directly towards.
So always find those leaders, and if you're not sure where he is, ask and kill him, and watch all their models go to command.
In addition to the crippled system tokens, we need a out of formation token. That'd be really cool.
Just a little question.
I want a leader token because when I have my 8 wound models, when I lose a leader, I need to put a little.
The merc kit comes with leader tokens.
Yep. Oh. Yeah, it's like a little chevron.
Yeah, it has a little chevron that says leader. Just because so many, there's so many merc units that are character units, i.e., all of them.
Yeah.
So every merc unit needs a leader token for when Boomhauer or Alexia or whoever dies.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yep.
Yeah. The only merc unit, like, there's just so many that need that. Yeah, they come with that, and they come with all the corpse tokens for Alexia. I use those to mark out of formation stuff all the time.
I have random stuff I tend to mark things with, but yeah, like, and it. Anyway, tangent, but it's a thing that's a problem with span lists.
Yes.
And it's not you being a genius player if I can't tell what your models are. It's that I can't tell what your models are.
Yeah,
front base arcs are so important.
Front base
I arcs love are that huge. Rick gives a lot of prize.
For being
front base. If your entire army has a front base mark, he has a raffle and gives it a good prize.
Yeah.
I might even, for my when I get my, when I give with the Kickstarter, I might give someone a free, one of the Kickstarter models for that same prize. So
it.
That'll
if you have a reach model, I'm going to say this. If you have a reach model that does not have its front arc marked, you are a person that annoys me.
Bile thralls are among the worst things that have to mark.
Yes.
Bile thralls are terrible. Like, there's lots of things out there.
So all your halberdiers have their arcs marked in Rhett?
All of my models have their arcs marked in both of my factions completely and totally.
Yeah, he did do that. He didn't paint them, but they're...
Front arc mark is the most important thing you can do to a model.
Yeah.
One thing I will say that annoyed me is Marshall painted my Emorvana, and he marked her the way that she's facing, as opposed to the way that the coat is facing, which drives me nuts.
He front arc marked her sideways.
So I'd have to play her sideways.
Had the Gorman with the set?
Well, I'm just going to have him front arc.
I was going to fix it for her, but yeah.
Somebody locally had a Gorman that was that way, because Gorman's shoulders, like, they marked their arc by the shoulders, but he's looking directly over his right shoulder, so he's just shuffling up the field sideways. Weights based on the arc mark. It's like Crab Gorman. Just
I did that with when I did my Strike Force. The unit leader who never matters because you always have a commander, but the unit leader who's pointing his spear directly up in the air. I front arced him the way his face is. Unfortunately, he's looking back over his back, and so I like if you look at the model, it looks like he's running backwards up the field.
Nice.
All right.
We're definitely way over time.
Thanks for listening to Crippled System episode 64.
64. Beatles.
The Nickelback of their time.